It's time for TWiT this week in tech. Micah Sargent, he's our token millennial, joins Sebastian Peak, the newest host at This Week in Computer Hardware, and IBM developer relations guy Wesley Faulkner. We're going to talk about all the hot new products from CES, including a new ray tracing video card from NVIDIA, the hot new AMD processors, rumored to be 5 gigahertz, and data privacy. Tim Cook has thrown down the gauntlet. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 702, recorded Sunday, January 20th, 2019. Milsplain it to me. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Oura Ring, the most accurate sleep and activity tracker ever. I love my Oura. Visit AuraRing.com and use the code TWIT for $50 off your purchase. And by ZipRecruiter, hire qualified candidates the smart way and take your business to the next level in 2019. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. And by ExpressVPN, protect your online activity today. For an extra 3 months free with a year package, go to ExpressVPN.com/TWIT. And by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com to find out which Atlassian tools are right for your team and give their products a try for free. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with the best tech journalists we can find at short notice during a NFL playoff season. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just teasing you. Wesley Faulkner's here from IBM. He's from developer relations at IBM. Hey, Wesley.
Hey, it's good to see you.
Good to see you. We'll be seeing you, I think, in Austin in a couple of months at South By. That'll be a lot of fun. Wesley is in Austin. He's developer relations at IBM, many years at AMD before that, and that may be relevant because also with us, I think for his first time on TWiT, Sebastian Peak, the editor-in-chief at PC Perspective, and our new host on This Week in Computer Hardware with Patrick Norton. Hey, Sebastian.
Hey, I'm the homegrown talent on the show.
Homegrown. You came, just we brought up him up from the Farm League. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
He used to be a shortstop for the Mississippi Blues. No, it's great to have you. Thank you for joining us, Sebastian.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for being willing to take on Twitch. We went through two hosts in a very brief period of time because Ryan Shrout, who started the show with me way back when, got a job at Intel, so we put Alan Malventano in his place, and then Alan got a job like 3 weeks later at Intel. So I think Ryan scooped up Alan. But
you could say this job is going to be my springboard to that Intel position. I've always lusted after.
Springboard to Intel. Mm. Also with us, it's great to have Micah Sargent, Chihuahua Coffee. Chihuahua.coffee.
That's the site. That's the site. Yeah. Anytime you don't have other journalists to hop on because of football, I'm happy to be here for you.
Because you couldn't care less.
I could not care less. But you know what? I appreciate it that some people do, and I understand.
We couldn't get you on during the Golden Globes, though. It was.
Oh, I don't care about any of
nothing. I don't care about anything on TV, he says. No, we love having all three of you on. It's great to have you. I don't know what's going on in football either, and I'm happy about that. And most of the people who listen to this show already know what happened. So there you go. We were talking. Actually, there was a little inside baseball going on between Sebastian and Wesley about the rumors that AMD, where Wesley used to work, but you don't have any. Do you have any inside information there? No. There was a rumor that they were going to do a 5 gigahertz Ryzen. And Sebastian, you said maybe, huh?
Well, yeah, there were rumors that were reported by numerous outlets. I think the original report came out of the Adored TV YouTube video. But
I don't trust that, YouTube videos for nothing, yeah. Man.
Essentially, he claimed that when Ryzen 3000 was going to be announced, and that was widely rumored to be the big announcement AMD was going to have at CES, that it was going to be like more cores, like all the way up to a 16-core desktop part. And they were talking about parts with 5 gigahertz boosts clock speeds. And then when Lisa actually came out and sort of pre-announced the next version of Ryzen, she did not give specifics. She said, we do not have final clocks. And even on the on-stage benchmarking with Cinebench that they did at their presentation, they were not revealing what clocks their prototype was actually running at. So that's all under wraps. I would not be surprised at all if they do have a part that can hit close to those numbers or those numbers on like single core boosts, but I would be very surprised if they had something that came out at like 8 cores, 16 threads.
That'd be pretty. That'd be, you could use that to heat a house. That would be so hot.
I mean, yeah, they're not as warm as maybe the previous generation AMD stuff we're used to, but yeah, I think if you're pushing 5 gigahertz, regardless on that many cores, you're going to be generating some heat. So,
in the past, I've rooted for AMD. For years, I rooted for AMD because they were keeping Intel honest. Intel, you know, really didn't have any competition for a long time. Then all of a sudden, AMD, maybe this was maybe as much as 15, 20 years ago, came along and really stuck it to them. And so I was really rooting for them. At this point, I'm starting to feel bad for Intel. I don't know if I...
Don't feel bad for
them. Don't feel bad for Intel?
They seem to be doing pretty well.
Okay. It feels like they've fumbled the future a little bit.
But they have enough in their bank. They have enough.
It's like IBM. They got patents. Yeah, they got money. It's not like, fine. No, nobody's going broke.
Yeah.
But then, at the same time, you know, Brian Krzanich kind of manages to, you know, not ever create a mobile part. They never get down to 10 nanometers. They... 5 gigahertz. What are you, crazy? and I started to feel sorry for him, to be honest with you. And I think it's important that we have numerous people competing hard against one another. So you think that x86 has legs? It's not going to be an ARM world going forward.
I think Intel's greatest strength was its greatest strength is turning into their greatest weakness. They used to say you're not a real chip company unless you have fabs, and they're having problems tooling up their own fabs. The good thing with AMD, which is good and bad, they spun off their fabs into GlobalFoundries, and that also allowed them to flex to other manufacturers. IBM was one of them, and then I can't think of the other one that they went with, in order to be able to go where they were able to get the die shrinks, what they needed. But now, since Intel does their own fab, they have to spend that money, their own research, and they don't have access to the same amount of patents as like an IBM does. That's probably what's slowing them down, is just being able to figure out how to get it smaller, not in the design, but actually in the manufacturing.
There's also a leadership crisis. I mean, Krzanich left under a cloud. The story was because he'd had an affair with an associate, but honestly, it really had to be because the company was not going in the right direction.
Allegedly. And I heard it was consensual. So,
I mean, you could easily overlook what happened. It wasn't like he used his position of power, you know, but it was a convenient pretext for getting rid of Krzanich. I will give somebody 5 points. I know you guys know, so don't say anything. If you could tell me who's the CEO right now of Intel, anybody? They're looking at each other. No one. It's their CFO, Bob Swan, but he's temporary, right? And now we're waiting.
Yeah, he doesn't want it.
He doesn't want it. So who's going to take over at Intel? Is there, and does it matter? By the way, Lisa Su, you were talking about the CEO at AMD, is considered one of the candidates.
Oh, yeah. The rumor is that they really want her. It would be quite a coup if they were to take her away. But I feel like she has like risen very, very fast to seemingly like the top of like the... She is one of the most celebrated CEOs, certainly in Silicon Valley now.
Interesting.
If not the nation. So,
isn't that interesting? And then there are a lot of candidates from, you know, other companies. Apple's senior vice president for hardware, Johnny, is it Shruji or Shruji? I'm not familiar with his work, but he was at Intel for a long time, for 15 years. He's also one of Apple's, apparently, according to The Street, one of Apple's highest paid executives. And if you're thinking Apple and high pay, that's pretty good money. Somebody from within, maybe Intel's own ranks, or perhaps former COO of Google Cloud, Diane Bryant.
It's funny. I just feel like it was hard for him to ever come back there, Krzanich, after that ill-timed, we shall say, stock sale.
Yeah, that was another problem, right?
Yeah. Just the optics were not good.
So you say I don't need to root for him, but I am rooting for Intel because we want, and I'm rooting for AMD. We want strong, competitive companies, and we know ARM is doing all right. The various ARM fabs.
Yeah, keep in mind AMD has an ARM license too.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. All right. I thought I'd just bring that up because we got the hardware guys in-house. But, Micah, we'll get something for you, too. Don't worry.
Hey, it's all right. I'm here. I'm learning.
Actually, I mean, one of the big shoes that we're going to find out in the next couple of years is going to drop is whether Apple stops buying Intel chips and starts making its own. Intel got a windfall because Apple, we found this out, by the way, finally in testimony during the Qualcomm lawsuit, that Apple couldn't buy Qualcomm chips for its next generation iPhones. They were forced to go to Intel and say, can you double your production? Because we need your chips. We can't buy Qualcomm chips for, was it the 10 or was it the 10S for the new generation iPhones?
The new ones,
the 10S.
There's testimony by Qualcomm on Friday. I don't know if you saw this.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Where they directly disputed saying, we never stop selling. And they pointed to their dispute with Samsung and said that when we were 2 years in dispute for licensing and we still sold to them. So it's conflicting testimony to say whether or not did they actually say they won't sell it or did they continue to try to sell it? And Apple said, well, we won't buy it unless these are our terms.
It was Apple's COO on the witness stand sworn in. So that would be perjury. Jeff Williams, who said no, they wouldn't sell it to us. Bloomberg has acquired some leaked emails in this regard. I'm not sure what to make of it. Let me go to the reveal. New reason Apple and Qualcomm parted ways. This came out a couple of days ago. This is part of the FTC. It's not actually Apple's fight with Qualcomm. This is the FTC trial against Qualcomm for not licensing their technology at a fair and reasonable price. In my wildest imagination, wrote Jeff Williams, of some evil intention of Apple, I have trouble coming up with a real scenario where anything of significant value could be leaked based on this code. I just hope the licensing dispute doesn't cloud good judgment in the team on a massive business opportunity. This is $2 billion of chips from Qualcomm. I was hoping to keep some decent quantity of business flowing with hopes the licensing stuff will get solved. Apparently, Qualcomm was concerned that Apple would leak technology information.
Okay, I think they've actually accused Apple of doing that, like giving information to Intel to allow them to build their the modems for the phone and avoid the $7.50 per device license fee that Qualcomm is charging.
It does say in the emails that Qualcomm offered to provide the software access Apple needed in return for a commitment from Apple to use Qualcomm chips in at least 50% of iPhones over 2 years. So maybe Jeff's story did need a little bit of additional information. Maybe it wasn't completely the Qualcomm's fault.
Does it mean there's a seems 750 seems very petty? just pay it, Apple.
So that's what they're asking. Qualcomm says we want $7.50 per iPhone. And I'm not clear about this. Maybe Micah knows, because I know Renee has said that it's not merely the $750, but it's that Qualcomm's demanding a percentage of revenue rather than a flat fee for licensing this stuff. Well,
but that's capped at $400 of device. So it's $400 per device is the cap of the revenue of the phone.
Still, you can understand why Apple might say, well, dudes,
you're just one part of the pie here.
Yeah, want a percentage of our total revenue? No, we want to, we'll license it, but, somebody asked for 5% of my revenue to play music or something, I'd say, no, I'll give you a flat fee, but I'm not going to tie it to how much
I make.
But
it's kind of core to the technology of what you're trying to do. What if they're charging the 5% fee of you being able to stream on the internet?
Right.
You'd be like, okay, that sounds reasonable.
Right. It's a fascinating back and forth, although it just feels like it was going on for decades.
That's what I was going to say. I can remember reporting on this years and years ago. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just ongoing. And there's like, is anyone actually getting any money out of it? What I understand lawyers. Sort of wanting to step lawyers. Away from Qualcomm.
Yeah, the lawyers win.
Apple finally gave up. You know, I think the Apple Samsung battle was really started by Steve Jobs. And I think Apple finally said, all right, that's enough. That's chill, enough. Please. Let's just chill. And I suppose at some point adults will prevail in this Qualcomm battle. Maybe not. I don't know. Apple has lost a few, but the FTC inquiry has really helped them, I think. Meanwhile, Tim Cook writes an editorial in Time magazine doubling down on Apple's best marketing pitch, privacy. Mm-hmm. He says, you deserve privacy online, and here's how you could actually get it. The problem is solvable. It's not too big, too challenging, or too late. He calls on Congress to do a few things. And I really like his three proposals here. First, the right to have personal data minimized. And some of this is in GDPR. The company.
Yeah, and some of this is stuff that Apple and others have
already
actually
does.
Put forth. And yeah. His sort of pitch in this article is about this really good sort of clearinghouse where the data brokers that collect our information, that buy our information from other companies and then sell it to other companies, those sort of middlemen, it's about being able to get access to them and know what they have on us and be able to change, delete, or adjust that information as we see fit. So I kind of like how he sort of piggybacked off of the idea of the thing that's already sort of in the works that these different companies are working on to say, and also, what really we need to be doing is talking about these companies that are buying data of ours, and we don't really know that. And then people are going to them and buying those packages of data to be able to understand what their consumers want.
Well, and after all, wasn't that what AT&T, Sprint, and T-Mobile were accused of doing, is selling location mm-hmm. data to brokers who then would sell it on to other people? You know, I mean, that's even worse. You know, that's like, well, anybody who wants location data. So he says he wants Congress to pass. I'm curious what all three of you think of this, but here's his proposal. This is Tim Cook again. Congress to pass comprehensive federal privacy legislation. Four principles. As I mentioned, the right to have personal data minimized. Second, the right to knowledge, to know what data is being collected and why. This all seems completely reasonable, by the way. Third, the right to access. It should be easy for you to access, correct, and delete. That's an important word. Your personal data. And finally, the right to data security. Without, you know, keep my data safe. And all you have to do, you look no farther than Equifax to realize how important that is. If you've got my data, you better darn well keep it safe.
I think some of this is not really helpful unless it makes it easy. A lot of the disclosure happens in a lot of legalese and things you click off when you sign something. Right. But if there's not an easy way of getting to it, like Facebook says that you can control ads.
Yeah, good luck.
You can turn off preferences, but you have to like dig through I don't know how many settings to find it. So all of this sounds well and good, but if there's no standard in terms of this is how you present it and this is how you find it and everybody does it, then it's almost impossible to manage. There should be – it would be nice if it was like a credit report where you say, tell me who all has my information. You get a big report and then you can say – you can go to them saying that's wrong, that's right, that's wrong, that's right. There needs to be some aggregator where you can go to one place and get it from all these different sites. But if you have to say what did I sign up for? Who has that information? And then you have to do the investigative work yourself to figure out who has it.
Onesie twosie, you know, with every single thing, every app on your phone.
That's why we believe the Federal Trade Commission should establish a data broker clearinghouse, requiring all data brokers to register, enabling consumers to track the transactions that have bundled and sold their data from place to place, and giving users the power to delete their data on demand, freely, easily, and online once and for all. So I do see that as sort of the credit report, the ability to go and say, okay, I know that when I was on Instagram and I clicked on these or I liked these things, then Instagram had that information, and maybe that information then got sold to this third party that then sold that information to someone else, and it goes all over the place. To be able to pull that in and collect, I think, is great. One of the things that I see there in the chat room, and when I talked about this before, the concern that, okay, if all of my data is in one place and it's a site that's built by the government, let's talk about privacy and security there. Because if you've got one place where someone can attack and get into, they've suddenly got all of my information from all of these different apps and services that I use. That's a little concerning. So that part kind of worries me. I don't know who should be in charge of holding on to all of that data for me and actually keeping it safe.
Well, and then there's a fight between federal and states. You know, I think it needs to be and I think Tim Cook's calling for a federal law, but state California has a very aggressive privacy law. Marco Rubio of Florida has proposed a bill poorly named the America Data Dissemination Act, which I could say what that sounds like, but it establishes a process for creating rules instead of issuing specific rules right away, and allows 27 months for Congress or the FTC to write the rules, and it would supersede any state law. Now, I don't think that's a bad thing.
I think
a patchwork of laws is probably hard for any one company to adhere to. So a federal law, if it's the right law, would be probably the right way to do this.
So is this like, oh boy.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, is this him saying, oh, dear, I see that we're about to start working on making these rules and we need more time, so we should have 27 months at least? I'm confused what this law is supposed to fix.
Well, public knowledge said the bill is based on the Privacy Act of 1974, which applied to federal agencies, but Rubio proposes the same rules apply to the private sector. But it's really more a transparency and data accuracy law than a privacy law. And so there is some concern that this is a sneaky attempt to override state privacy laws and then do nothing at the federal level.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really like Wes's idea of like a report where everything has to be registered and all accesses are something that users can themselves access and see exactly where your information is going. But I think another thing that we have to have, if there were to be some sort of sweeping legislation that at a federal level laid down some rules, one of them is how the data is actually handled. Because as we've seen with, I think this week, yet another data breach, or at least one that was exposed.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that one. Oof.
Like how is your data stored? Well, unfortunately, far too many times in my life, it turns out my data was stored in plain text.
Yeah.
So it doesn't help me very much.
So Troy Hunt on Wednesday published a post on Have I Been Pwned, his great site, about collection number one, which contains 773 million in the clear unique email addresses, 21 million unique passwords. It was a big deal. But I love Brian Krebs because his first thing he does is he actually hunts down the guy who posted this. He apparently has a Telegram account, his username Sanixer, and he contacted him to find out more about Collection One, which, by the way, is available for the low price of $45. $45, which Brian points out is just 0.000002 cents per password. And Sanixer says, oh, you don't want Collection One. That's 2 or 3 years old. I've got much, much more recent stuff. And I hope that all of this stuff will eventually make it into Have I Been Pwned. If you go to haveibeenpwned.com, which everybody probably should do at this point, not do the front page, which is enter your email address. Forget it. You know your email address is compromised. That's not the problem.
Yeah.
Click the tab at the top that says passwords and enter in some passwords. That's an eye opener. These are passwords that are in the clear in collection number one. Go ahead. Let's see. This is Karsten. Oh, Karsten, that password's been seen 60,000 times before. Would you enter monkey123?
Wait.
Or is that your password? But so I entered the
password. Monkey 123.
Yeah, okay. But I entered the password that I use on low security sites all the time. Totally pwned.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the one everybody should be going to. And it does not include Sanixer's complete collection. Just collection one, which is big enough. So honestly, those passwords are no good anymore. The bottom line, and Krebs points this out, is turn on two-factor every single place you can. Never, ever reuse passwords.
And my password has not been pwned.
Oh, good news. Yeah, the first, what I would do is go there and enter your email password. Because that's the keys to the kingdom. Because if somebody can get into your email account, first of all, turn on two-factor if you're not. And if you're using an email provider that doesn't offer two-factor, get the hell out.
Yeah, what are you doing there?
What are you, crazy?
And also, if you're using Yahoo, get out of there. I'm just going to say it.
They do have two-factor, but yeah.
I know, but don't. Yeah.
I had a call on the radio show today from a very nice woman who said, I just thought I hadn't done it in months, check my online brokerage. So I called them, and they said, oh, you changed your password. I couldn't log in, so I called them. They said, you changed your password yesterday. And we just got all the paperwork to sell all your stocks and send a check. And she said, no, that wasn't me. And this is how horrible it was. She said the fraud division of this online broker got involved. And they said, yeah, we listened to the call. It was a man pretending to be a woman. Hi, this is Mara.
What in the world?
And they had her address. They had her phone number. And in order to verify the identity, as many do, the stock brokerage used her credit report to say, well, did you ever get a loan for this? Did you ever, you know, where did you live of these three addresses? You know how they do that.
And the
hacker knew it all because obviously, so Mara said, how did they get that? I said, well, probably from Equifax. But who knows, right? If they, and at this point, they probably have your social. Maybe they got it from Marriott. They had enough information about her to pose as her to say, sell all my stocks and send me a check.
Oh, that's awful.
Yes, lucky she caught it. Lucky she caught it. So, but the fact that the fraud department said, yeah, it was a guy pretending to be a woman. And that the customer service rep said, yeah, yeah, fine. Okay, here's your, tell us where to send your money. So that's why these breaches are important, and that's why you got to turn on two-factor. You should check your email password especially, because if they get your email, they can go to every other site and say, oh, I forgot my password. Send me a reset, and you're dead.
Do you remember the beginning of the internet? There used to be like a shield at the bottom that says secure.
Secure. They still do that on some sites.
When you go buy fruit and it's organic, it's certified by some third party.
Yeah.
I think the internet needs to come up with a list of things you should have, like the kind of SSL certificate, the type of two-factor authentication that your site supports, you know, whether it's, you know, SMS or through an authentication app or something like that. Come up with some sort of seal. And so I know when I go to eBay or I go to Gmail that if it has the seal, that it checks all those boxes. And I would have to think about this less.
Nothing like that exists, though, right? I mean, there's a Norton, but I don't trust, you know.
Yeah, I don't trust. Yeah, I see one of those seals at the bottom. I'm like, nope, I don't even like
this. You know
this
that all that happened is the company paid this company at one point. Maybe they did an assay, a security assay. Maybe not.
Yeah. You like right click on it. Oh, this is just a PNG they loaded into this stupid site.
Yeah, Yubico needs to like, you know, work on that or something.
We need something. And you know, if it's government, I don't know. I think it has to be at some point. There is a Democratic bill, Ron Wyden. Has put forward, which proposes significant jail time for somebody who allows your data to be leaked. I think that's a good idea. Let's get these guys'
attention. I
think
there do need to be harder penalties, yes. Absolutely. Because that's when it comes to the protection, that's the one thing that I think will either a whole heck of a lot of money that you got to pay or jail time for folks who are, you know, legitimately negligent in whatever aspect to result in this. Because I saw like they're working on potentially charging Facebook a whole heck of a lot of money or thinking about it. I can't remember what that post had said, but yeah, I think money talks, as they say.
What about on mandating like in the top corner, they have to say how many breaches they've had in the last 30 days.
There you go. Well, GDPR requires, you know, that you reveal breaches within 72 hours. That's a big, so I was doing a little research. I wonder what Equifax, what were the big fines and penalties Equifax had to pay for that breach, which probably cost Mara. They reached an agreement with the New York State Department of Financial Services and seven other state banking regulators. The order does not impose any fines or monetary penalties. They agreed to implement stronger data security measures.
And this is just states that have
this is the state. There's no federal. Not even all states. There's no.
Not even required to make sure they hire someone who has experience in data security.
As far as I can tell, Equifax made money on this by selling monitoring services to the poor people who'd been hacked.
Isn't that terrible?
That's really what happened. They made money. I don't think there's any severe penalty that I can find anywhere. The DOJ and SEC have charged former Equifax executives for insider trading. Remember, there was a big stock sale right before the breach was revealed. So maybe somebody's going to go down on that. It does face.
That was just foolish, too. Why would you? Why even try to do that? That was just so stupid.
They continue to be under investigation by the FTC, and they face a lot of civil lawsuits. I think maybe that in the long run, that's what's going to happen. Maybe is that some civil lawsuits will cost them. But right now, Equifax is sitting pretty. And I don't see anything going on with Marriott. I don't see anything going on with Target. I don't see anything going on. I mean, Yahoo, 3 billion records. 3 billion.
Well, Leo, they have made a commitment to your privacy.
We're committed to your privacy. We're going to rename it. It's what we're going to do. It's going to be, we're not going to call it Oath. We're going to call it Verizon Media. Okay, thank you.
I was part of the OPMI breach because I applied for secret clearance. Because I used to work for Dell, and so I need to get on military bases and stuff.
That's
like that.
That's the Office of Personnel Management, the U.S. government.
Yeah, and so my FBI file, when you go through security clearance, they ask for some extremely sensitive information.
Yeah.
Basically, they want to know if anyone could blackmail you, what can they blackmail you with?
Right.
And you have to like list all of that, and then they got breached. And then all I got was a letter in the mail saying, hey, your stuff got stolen.
Look out for those blackmail letters, Wesley.
Yeah.
They'll be coming.
And that's the part that makes me worried about this online clearinghouse idea, because I think that it's a good idea, but I don't trust anybody to have that information on me because no one's done a good enough job with that.
You know, there is good news about the OPMI breach, Wesley. You'll be glad to know that. It turns out it probably wasn't a bad guy. It was China. And they're not, because that data, like the Yahoo data, has never emerged in public, you know, on the dark web or for sale anywhere. And it really was probably just China trying to, you know, figure out who they can suborn, where, you know.
Now they have my Marriott data.
They have that. Oh, yeah. China's got the whole thing. They got a great picture of who is Wesley Faulkner. You know, if I were you, I'd buy some Huawei gear and you'd have a complete set. You'd collect all.
No, but they just buy every breach online.
Write me a coupon. Right. If you're listening right now, send me a coupon.
Send me a coupon.
At a discount.
I'll buy a Huawei phone. No, seriously, in a way, this is what's really sad. It's better to be breached by a state actor than have your stuff sold on the dark web, right?
You know what's best is none of that to happen, though.
Oh, that. Well,
yeah, that one's good. But
dream on, Mike.
Maybe we should ask, like, when you're getting to know someone new, you just say, so if you had to have your data stolen by a country, what country would you choose?
Oh,
you can learn a lot about a person from that, sure. I think.
I trust China. I trust China trust Mark Zuckerberg. there's a question to ask on a first date. Who do you trust more, China or Zuckerberg? Think hard.
You just look at him dead in the eyes.
Right?
Really hard about it.
Think hard. All right, let's take a little break. I don't know. I didn't mean to start with such bad news. We'll find some happy-go-lucky. Actually, did you go to CES, Sebastian?
I did. I was actually there only for 3 days, but I did go.
3 days felt like a lifetime.
It was nice to sneak out early, though, when everybody else had to stay that extra day or two. And I'm like, sorry, guys, got to get on the plane.
Yeah, bye-bye. I always like to stay until Sunday because Sunday's fun because all the geeks are going home and all the gamblers are coming in.
Yes.
It's always fun to fly out of Vegas at the end of the week to watch the broke people leave and the fresh suckers, guests coming in. It's always fun. And it's fun on Sunday if you take a cab to the airport to McCarran, because this happened to me the other last time I was in Vegas. The cabbie said, see that guy? He's like walking to the airport, rolling his luggage behind him. He lost everything but his plane ticket. He can't afford cab fare to the airport. He's walking. And apparently that's, you see a lot of that. Little tip, kids.
Maybe feel better.
Put some cab fare in your shoe. You never know.
Leo, you said it was supposed to get more uplifting.
I know. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Our show today, I'm happy to tell you about my Oura ring. Some of you have noticed I wear this ring, and I've been wearing this for some time. Kevin Rose was the first to tell me about it way back when he was on Triangulation. He's an advisor to this company. It's a Finnish company. And he said, I'll hook you up with Harpreet, and he'll get you one. And he did. I've been wearing it ever since. This beats, you know, I have an Apple Watch, I have a Fitbit. This beats any other tracker, fitness or health or sleep tracker on the market. It is awesome. Oura is O-U-R-A, AuraRing.com. Let me show you what it does. It is, of course, an activity tracker. You know, it shows you how much exercise you've got, you know, and how many calories you've used. It ties in if you use an iPhone with Apple Health, which is great. So you can get more information from Apple Health. So it shows you I rode for 30 minutes yesterday, how many calories. It got that from Apple Health. How much walking I did, how many calories I burned. Here's my sleep score. This is fascinating. So the ring inside, it has an accelerometer. That's how it measures footsteps and movement. But it also has an infrared optical pulse measure that's more accurate than on your wrist because it's on your finger, 3D accelerometer, gyroscope, and a temperature sensor. It is really great. This is my sleep score from last night, 66. Oy. What? Yeesh. Not good. And I can tap on it and I can learn more about how much awake time, how much REM time, how much was light sleep, how much was deep sleep, how fast I went to sleep. It only took me 26 minutes. That's actually a long time to fall asleep. But I only had 6% deep sleep, 22 minutes, an hour, three quarters of dreaming. It says pay attention because your restfulness was bad. And so it gives you advice about optimizing your sleep environment, your temperature, avoid spicy meals, get regular activity. It will give you information that's really useful. Here's my resting heart rate. This is the other thing I really like is the temperature information is fascinating. Did you know that right before you get sick, your temperature is going to go up slightly? And here's a 30-day measurement of my temperature. So you can see if it's going up, maybe you're about to get sick or maybe you drank too much last night. The other thing that's fascinating is something called heart rate variability. It turns out that higher is better when it comes to heart rate variability. That's the amount of time in between beats. It should be less consistent, not more consistent. And it can range from below 20 to over 100. 100's great. And so you'll see, in fact, if I look at my monthly, look at this. My heart rate variability plummeted in November and December. It's coming back up. That will show you readiness, the ability to work out, your fitness level. Maybe you're overtraining. Maybe you're under stress. They have lots of information in the app that tells you what it means. There has never been a better device, as far as I'm concerned, for giving you information. Now, that's all the good news. There is bad news. They're sold out through April. I hate to do this to you, but this has proven so popular that they can't keep them in stock. By the way, the other thing I recommend, read the privacy policy. It is a Finnish company. Your data is highly protected, anonymized. It is completely secure. So this is one smart fitness tracker that you can use without worrying. The daily feedback really is great to helping you understand your body, improve your health, to reach your goals. It's very light. It's made of titanium with a diamond hard carbon coating. So it is light, it is strong, it is non-allergenic. You don't have to worry about it. They have a sizers. In fact, you can get the sizer kit. In fact, might do that now so you get ready. It comes in 8 different sizes and a variety of looks. I could show you a couple here. The one I'm wearing is $299. They also have a shiny, there's the shiny silver. It's very pretty. There's actually, I'm wearing the Stealth, which is $399. You can get Heritage or Balance, depending. Those are different shapes. Now, I'll give you a few more stats. The battery lasts up to a week. You don't have to charge it every day. What I do is, you know, I put it when I'm taking a shower. And you, by the way, completely waterproof. I wear it in the shower, the bath, the hot tub, everywhere. It's got a great app for iOS or Android. They're updating it all the time with more information. It will sync to your mobile device using Bluetooth LE. So it's very easy, very fast, transparent, simple thing to do. You don't have to pair it or anything like that. Track your sleep. Make the most of your day. Get great insights into how you're feeling, what your health situation is. I'm proud of myself. My resting heart rate's down to 56, which is a very good sign. Aura Ring, O-U-R-A-R-I-N-G.com. If you order it now, you'll be getting it in April. And if you use the offer code TWIT at checkout, you'll get $50 off. They are, you know, order now and you'll get it in April. And do that, because if you wait to April, it'll be order it now and get it in, you know, June or something. Although Harpreet tells me they're ramping up. They're getting ready. They know they're going to get a lot of sales here, and I think they should. This is the best fitness device I've used. AuraRing.com. And if you look back, you'll notice I've been wearing this for at least 6 months. I love this thing. And we thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. Micah Sargent is here. He writes regularly at iMore. You've seen his stuff there. You've seen him on our show. He does podcasts, too. And I love the Office podcast. That is fantastic. Oh, Micah, you're muted.
Oh.
That was our fault. Go ahead.
Okay. I was like, wait, no.
Speak, Micah.
Yeah. Somehow I manage the podcast about The Office I do with Tiffany Arment.
Oh, that's Marco's wife.
Yes. Well, I would say Marco is her husband.
Much better. Much better.
She's awesome. She's
Marco,
awesome.
Marco Arment is a legend, a programming legend.
Yes.
At Tumblr. He does Overcast, the best podcast, audio podcast app on iOS. Great guy. Oh, nice. And Tiff is great, too. That's Somehow I Manage. Have you gotten through all the episodes yet, or?
Oh, no. We are only on season 3. We're still working our way through. But we're a little bit away from episode 52. But, you know, we're getting there. We've been almost doing it for a year, which is surprising.
Yeah. I learned something from it. I didn't realize that the early episodes of The Office were very dark.
Yeah, very dark. It wasn't until season 2 when they decided, the producers were like, we can't make this like the British version of The Office, which is very dark comedy.
Because they only did 6 episodes or something, right?
They only did 6 episodes. It didn't do well, and they wanted to keep it going. It was like one of the only shows at the time where they begged, you know, NBC, please let us keep making the show. They said they would, and then it took off.
One of the greatest comedies, if not the greatest comedy of all time, I think. Just a great show.
Amen.
Also with us, Wesley Faulkner. He is currently in developer relations at IBM. Wesley83 on the Twitter. That is either your high school football number, your birth date, or the number of beers you can drink before you fall over. I don't know which.
That's maybe how many times my password's been breached.
I always, when I just assume when I see a number in a handle that it's a birth year.
It's not.
But it can't be for you.
Yeah, but I'll tell you next time.
You don't have to tell us what it is. That's okay. That's okay. Yeah. 82 was taken, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also and here.
84 is just way too much.
Also here, and we're thrilled to have him, our brand new host of This Week in Computer Hardware with Patrick Norton, Sebastian Peake, editor-in-chief of PC Perspective.
I feel kind of like one of those, you know, when you watch a Fox sporting event, like the World Series, and then they look out into the crowd, like Joe Buck's like, oh, look who happens to be here. And they have like one of their Fox celebrities just happens to be watching the game. That's me. Sort of.
Yeah. It's like Mr. Cotter. You're Gabe Kaplan out in the stands. Hey, it's Gabe Kaplan. Hey, everybody, watch Mr. Cotter. Sundays at 3. welcome back, Cotter. Amazon's Echo got a professional voice. Have you heard it yet?
I listened to it. It sounds weird.
Yeah, I don't like it.
It emphasizes some words and it just doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
yeah, it's not, it's not,
here's,
it's crazy.
So here's, and you know, we're on the Flash Briefing. I encourage you, if you're going to use Amazon's Flash Briefing, which I use every morning, I love it, to use stuff that's pre-recorded, not stuff that it reads. So like when I do Tech Meme, it reads headlines. And this is what it sounds like.
Royal bride's personalized wedding touches strike a chord with two blockbuster British royal weddings this year and an enduring fascination.
Royal wedding?
Royal wedding. Yeah.
What is?
So that's yeah, yeah, that's Echo. That's her voice, right? Here is supposedly how much better it will sound.
Nick Jonas. Nicholas Jerry Jonas is an American singer, songwriter, actor, and record producer.
Oh, Jonas, that's supposed began to be the flat acting version.
Oh, is there one that's...
The one with the emphasis.
Oh, here's the newscaster voice. You ready?
Yeah.
Ready. Hey, that's the flat one. Here's the newscaster.
Royal bride's personalized wedding touches strike a chord.
Accord.
With two blockbuster British royal weddings Accord. This year and an enduring fascination,
I will talk like
the Brits,
this on the show
American
from now on, because I think people are used to how
can find plenty
Amazon's Echo talks.
While royal wedding fashion will have an influence on,
yeah, I
don't think that's how newscasters talk either.
No,
yeah, it's weird.
Is Google just own this space? I mean, Google Duplex really sounds like a person.
I've been having so much. I got my Google Home out recently. Because Google did a very, very, very good job. I like one of these recent tests for how intelligent each of the virtual assistants is. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to pull out my Google Home again because the Google Assistant had done such a good job and I wanted to just play around with it. And I forgot that they had added like six different voices that are named just colors, different colors.
Right.
And each of them sounds incredible.
Yeah. They kind of own this, don't they?
Yeah. They're way ahead, especially since they've had Google Voice, which was what, Grand Central?
Yeah.
They've been listening to. They have so
They've been listening. Voices. They know what we sound like. I want the Wesley Faulkner voice. Didn't they demo at Google I.O. using
John Legend?
Yeah, that's right. It was John Legend's voice.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Actually, I'd prefer Matthew McConaughey.
All right.
Waking up.
Wouldn't that get all right.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, no, not again.
Tom, remember Tom used to have celebrity voices in its GPS when you know, and I tried Dennis Hopper briefly.
And they had GLaDOS, which would tell you the wrong direction.
GLaDOS would give you the, it's like turn right when you were supposed to turn left. Dennis Hopper was so stoned out. It was just, oh, man, here we are. Why would anybody want to go here? It was just weird. But I kind of enjoyed that. I don't know. All right. Anyway, Google seems to be winning in that regard. Google.
I do like that it can whisper, though, the Echo.
Whisper.
I think if you whisper to it, then it'll whisper back.
The first time you whisper, it says, I think you're talking in whisper mode, are you? Yes. Okay. I'll whisper. Google announced that they're buying... Fossil's smartwatch tech. This almost felt like an admission of failure to me.
Sounds like Motorola.
Yeah, or HTC. That's what they've been doing, isn't it? They've been so they did kind of an HTC with Fossil. Fossil still is going to make smartwatches. They still have 100 people working there. But Google spent $40 million to get smartwatch technology currently under development and transfer a number of Fossil employees to Google. Number unknown. Fossil said, we're still going to do smartwatches. We still have a big team working on it. But what is Fossil doing that Android Wear is not doing?
They just want to make sure someone keeps making those watches.
Oh, maybe that's it. Here. It would be a shame if you were to stop making watches.
They need to work on making revving the processors, because that's what's holding them back.
That's right.
They're underpowered.
That's right.
And they're taking too much power. And doesn't seem like ARM is really caring all that much. You're like, here's another processor that's a couple years
old. Ancient. So, and Apple's just leaps and bounds, you know, ahead because they're designing their own silicon. They're doing a great job with it. I would like to have a great Android Wear. Anyway, this would bolster a longstanding rumor that Google might get into the Pixel Watch.
Oh, yeah.
Will it take photos?
Why do you want your watch to take photos?
I don't want it to take photos. Pixel is so well known for being a good camera phone. I thought, if you're going to tag that brand onto a smartwatch, will this be the first smartwatch that you can hold up and take a photo with this tiny little lens on the end of it?
I had a watch like that. It was a thick band and had a little lens right here, but it's very hard to get a decent picture holding up your wrist like that. It's not easy.
It's got to be on the top.
Are you flexing? What's the deal?
Nothing.
If my wearable doesn't let me take selfies, I'm out.
I mean, I guess selfies, yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah. What time is it?
See, it's like, am I looking at my watch or am I taking a picture right now?
See? You don't know, do you?
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
I already around people without smartwatch that don't use smartwatches or aren't used to them. I have to go. I promise I'm not looking at my watch because I want to go away from you right now because I've had too many people. Are you in a hurry? Are you busy right now? No. I promise. It's just my watch tapped me.
This was initially a selling point on the Apple Watches. Oh, you don't have to look at your phone. You just look at your watch, and then people think you're really bored.
Like you're being rude. It's worse.
Almost. Marginally less rude than looking at your phone, but only a little bit. It's a surreptitious. Yeah, so you have to kind of like surreptitiously look. Looking. What are you looking at? Nothing.
My waist.
My waist. I'm looking at my belt.
Do you think it's going to last, smartwatches? I mean,
I don't know. Do you?
Is it just a fad like VR?
Do you not wear a smartwatch, Wesley?
I do. I have this cheap one.
Oh no, which one is that? Is that the Pebble?
It's the Amazfit.
You have an off-brand smartwatch. No wonder you don't like them.
It's $60.
I got it at a gas station. Yeah. It was $60.
It's because there. I do have a Pixel phone. There's nothing that this battery lasts 30 days is why I wear. And so I do my sleep tracking and all that stuff on it. But it gives like basic notifications. I did have a Pebble. I was one of the Kickstarter backers of Pebble, and there's nothing like it that has the functionality. That thing was amazing. If they made an updated Pebble, I would buy it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But unfortunately they folded.
Yeah, I have mine in my drawer next to me. I was a backer of that too.
Me too. Back I backed it. Yeah, was it? Yeah.
You could reply to text message. You could just you can dismiss calls. You can send to voicemail. You could do so much with that, and it also would last like a week. Nostalgia.
You need to enter Apple's soothing walled garden, Wesley. Join us. One of us. Because the Apple Watch is really the only wrist wearable anyway that's watch. worth.
I love it for the heart stuff though. I mean, and that's sort of what, because I was on Series 3, and was going to be fine and content with that until I found out about the stuff that was available on the Series 4, because I did have some heart issues. I guess that had been last year. I ended up in the ER a couple times with some heart stuff. And so when I found out that Apple was going to be making a watch that had ECG, I was like, I just upgraded to the Series 3, but this one, like, I want to get this one and I can use that. And my doctor can see that and make sure I don't have, you know, arrhythmias going on.
You can get the Alive Core for, if you have arrhythmia or a arterial fibrillation, the Alive Core is $99. It will work with any smartphone. That was
Bluetooth connected.
Yeah, that was Vic Gundotra left after the debacle that was Google Plus, left Google, was CEO. He's just recently stepped down as CEO. He's going to become chairman of the board, I guess. But he said, thanks to Apple and the ECG watch, our sales went through the roof because people found out that you could do that. And Alive Core is only $99. You don't have to have a special watch.
Really good hardware too. Like it's a high quality product that is helpful for folks who otherwise you have to wear one of those really ridiculous leads, like multi-lead thing that it's called a holster a Holter monitor. That's it. And it's just this big bulky thing that you got to make sure the batteries are in it. And it's much different from being able to have this tiny little wafer you can touch your fingers to and make sure you're A-okay heart wise.
Are you okay now?
Yes. Thank goodness, because they were like, we might have to go in and do node ablation. So I was going to have heart surgery. And then they found out that the heart stuff was caused by something totally unrelated. So it wasn't like bad stuff. My heart anatomy was A-okay. So
did you have a broken heart?
I had a broken arm. No, it was food allergies, actually, that ended up causing it.
You're kidding. Wow.
No.
Wow.
It was a whole deal.
I wish I were allergic to food.
A friend of mine says she's allergic to pizza. It makes her butt swell up.
Oh, God. Yes, right. That's exactly my problem. I swell up whenever I eat. So to your point earlier, Wesley, you were talking about Facebook users and generally whether users even know that data is being collected. Pew, the research center, they do good stuff. Recently did a survey of Facebook users. This is the most depressing. They found 75% of Facebook users, 74%, didn't even know that Facebook maintains a list of their interests and traits to target them with ads. They didn't even know that. 75%. And then researchers said, well, go look at your Facebook ad preferences page. And then 51% said, well, I'm uncomfortable with that. And 25% said, you know what? The ad preferences page is wrong about me. Well, that's not a surprise. 88% of the people they polled, and they polled 963 Facebook users aged 18 and older, 88% had at least something on that ad preferences page that had been generated for them. But this is
I would love to see the this study paired with the other one saying how much would you pay, how much will yes. you have to get paid to get dumped it, dump your Facebook, and see if that number fluctuates, like if it goes up or down.
After now that they you know they're the spying on you, how much? Because wasn't it $1,000? People would you'd have to pay me $1,000 to give up my Facebook.
They wouldn't be able to stay away.
Oh.
Maybe they'd take the $1,000, but they'd be getting back in on the sly. Like an addiction.
I've been getting in on the sly, I admit it.
They'd make another account, like a ghost account, and then they'd go in and they'd spy on people.
No, I deactivated my Facebook account, and it feels really good.
I deleted it. They give you an ability to do that now. You have to wait 30, 31 days or something like that, and mine was just deleted full on a couple days ago.
See, I've been debating that. It's deactivated, but then how am I going to use my Facebook portals?
Oh, no. You just make a dummy account, I guess.
No, I debated. I don't want somebody to steal my name, but I guess really if I'm very public about not having a Facebook account, that's that, right?
Yeah.
did delete my Instagram account.
Oh, see, I kept that, and that makes me a bad person.
No.
Because I got rid of Facebook, but people are like, you're they not still really get your off data. Facebook.
Yeah. That's okay. I'm going to just use WhatsApp from now on.
Question about the portal while you're talking about it.
Yeah, you want
one? I know that you can only have, 5,000 Facebook friends? That's the top cap?
That's right.
So if you have a portal and you want to add someone, you're at your 5,000 number, can you?
Do you really want 5,000 people
on
your portal
popular,
directory?
Let's say you wanted to use it for, let's say, this show or whatever. And,
so the way portal works.
Anyone could call in or something.
The way portal works is really tied to Messenger. So I don't think there's any limit to the number of people you can use Messenger to contact.
Oh, okay.
So as long as somebody has a Facebook Messenger account, and who doesn't? By the way, you still have a Facebook Messenger account, Micah, because you can delete your Facebook, but it does not delete your Messenger account. Did you know that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
See,
that's
people don't even know that.
Where do you go to delete that?
I don't know.
Now how much would
you
pay?
I got to write an article about it. Here's how to delete
I stupidly bought two portals, the big ones. Not only did I get portals, but I got the 17-inch ones. They're great. They're really cool. But you have to have a Facebook Messenger account to use it. I just don't want to do it.
Now, how is that different from like a good screen in a webcam?
It's kind of purpose built. So,
okay,
I was going to give it to my mom, right? So it makes it very easy for her. There's a big button that says "Talk to Leo," or I can call her and I'll appear on her screen. It's just easy.
Okay, yeah.
That's the main reason. I tried to return it; they wouldn't let me.
They wouldn't let you.
Well,
what do you
they
mean?
Said there's a 30-day return policy. So I thought, well, I'll buy this. I'll review it and I'll give it back. And I sent them a note, in 2 weeks saying I want to send it back. They said, oh, well, you can return it. But first you have to tell us why. And we need to copy the invoice. So I said, I don't want it because I don't want you spying on me. And here's my invoice. And then I never heard from them again.
Wow. So that basically that's I think legally that's them saying they are spying on you, right?
Yeah. It's like, oh, well, never pay no attention.
Yeah. Just forget about this, please.
The Facebook portal went,
nope. You're stuck with me, Leo.
Now, Jeff Jarvis got very upset in a way that one would not expect over this article from Wired magazine, Kate O'Neill. And it's not, I should point out, it's an opinion piece, not an article. Facebook's 10-year challenge is just a harmless meme, right? She posited, well, we know, no, but what if Facebook was just trying to collect data about how people age over 10 years? And it's more of a what if piece. It made Jeff went ballistic. He said, this is exactly what's wrong with journalism today. This is not, you know, this is going to, people are going to, this is going to bring government regulation down on their heads. This is inappropriate. I don't know. I don't think it's that far fetched. Maybe they are collecting that kind of data. Of course they are.
I'm of two minds of this.
Okay.
First of all, from the technical point of view, there's a lot easier way of doing this.
Right.
So I doubt that this is something that Facebook is doing.
Facebook, by the way, says we have nothing. Yeah. This is a user-generated meme. We don't have anything.
Yeah, this
to do
is not a method they would use to get this information.
Right.
On the other hand, in terms of going back to the article we just talked about, how many people know what Facebook is collecting on you, I think this is something that gets into the public space easier than the audience is not the technical audience. The audience is the people who don't know that this stuff is even possible.
Right.
That they were like, and maybe it'll add just enough skepticism for them to, you know, say, oh, what's my whatever it was, the porn star name with the city you grew up on, I mean the street you grew up on, and then your last name, that's your porn star name or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I brought that one. I brought that one up to Jeff that, you know, Cambridge Analytica did pretty good using those Facebook quizzes to gather information about people.
And so there's maybe people like, I shouldn't submit this information. I shouldn't do this. And
I
want people to pause, just the layman people, and just so they can understand, like, I shouldn't volunteer this information, or use it ironically, which is great. But don't. So from a technical standpoint, there's a lot easier way of doing this, especially understanding how machine learning works. And it's also not a dirty data set. There's ways of cleaning it to make sure that you get good data in order to train your model. But in terms of age progression, that's really not really useful for a whole bunch of applications. But facial recognition and training it to say this is a different twin time, and just making sure that they know this, increase the accuracy rate of predicting the right person, that's something else. But I think this is a great article in terms of it's getting tons of attention from people who participated who might not know that this stuff is possible.
That's
sane. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that second mind that you had there. I think, you know, one of the things, because I saw a bunch of different people talking about that after this 10-year challenge happened or whatever. And at first I was sort of like, that's silly. And I could understand sort of the griping about that. But I think certainly in the idea that if there was like a data scientist out there who wanted to try and figure out if they could, you know, correctly predict how someone aged over time, then they could like search the hashtag that exists or search for those Facebook posts that exist. But I mean, if you're on Facebook and you have been on Facebook for a while and uploading photos of yourself from, you know, high school into college and on, then there's the whole history of how you age in a better way than just between 10-year periods. And so it's sort of already there, I guess. Not that, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't make the idea that we should be concerned about privacy any less. We absolutely should be. But I guess we could literally say this about anything that we put on the internet. It's like, oh, Twitter was just made to collect how our minds are thinking at the time so that it can better sell to us. It's all sort of doing that always. So I don't know how this is that much different from something else.
It's as bad as the Tide Pod Challenge or the Bird Box Challenge.
Oh, my Lord.
So Netflix actually had to tweet, can't believe I have to say this, but please do not hurt yourself with this Bird Box challenge. It's the movie with Sandra Bullock where you have to keep yourself blindfolded. So people
I'm
are
fine
like,
with people hurting themselves. I just don't want them to hurt other people.
Yeah, that's a good point. If it's, what's his name? Who is the YouTuber who did the first one? He walked into the street and drove around. That, you know, the guy we, what's his name? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Blanked his name out. The brothers.
Yeah, same. Oh, golly. He's
no, it's
really
good.
Famous.
Don't occupy any
okay,
space
yeah,
of your brain
goodness.
With this guy's name. Anyway, apparently other people have tried to drive driving with blindfolds on. Don't do that. Netflix says, we don't know how this started, and we appreciate the love, but boy and girl, who I guess are on Bird Box, have just one wish for 2019, is that you do not end up in the hospital due to memes. Yeah, this seems fair.
I just don't know why this has to be said. And I guess a question here is, like, do you think that... I'm trying to think of a time before we sort of had these social networks, and I don't know, you put in like a VHS tape and watched some movie back in the day, and something in the movie, I'm trying to think of something like...
Nothing like this ever happened. Trust me, I'm an old man.
That's what I'm wondering.
None of this. Yeah. You know what? This is a form of insanity that is new to the world, and it's because of social media, and it's why
you
I'm
never
not on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. It's why Elon Musk has to stop tweeting. It's why the president has to stop tweeting.
Oh,
it makes
Lord.
People nuts.
You never went into a dark bathroom and said, like, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary three times.
Yeah, but that was harmless.
Some of this is harmless, but we did.
Okay, maybe you're right.
I'm just trying to think if
By the way,
did
never
happen,
did do that. But
it just didn't get put out there, you know, like it wasn't recorded anywhere. But I think that there is something to what you're saying, Leo, because we know that our dopaminergical systems are affected by likes and retweets and replies and things like that.
Even if people did do Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, it wasn't like didn't sweep the nation.
That's true.
As right.
You can't get rid of stupid people. Unless these become more popular, like the Tide Challenge.
It's the Darwin Awards. Like, we are getting rid of stupid people.
But you think of people
just don't
who
endanger
are like
Logan Aaron Paul. Oh, no, it came to me. Logan Paul. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Put it out of your mind again.
Here is, as long as we're talking stupid people, in the fake news era, native ads are muddying the waters. This is from Boston University research. An online experiment found that less than 1 in 10 people can tell sponsored content from an article. Now, that's to me, this is really depressing because this is from a study done by Boston University School of Communication Assistant Professor of Advertising. Her online survey divulged to participants they were viewing advertisements, but many of the people, 90%, thought they'd been looking at an article, even though they were told ahead of time. They were told ahead of time. The 738 nationally representative sample of U.S. adults. Doesn't surprise me, I guess, but it is depressing. Native advertising, if you don't know, is, and you see it everywhere now, is something that somebody paid for. It looks like an article in a newspaper or a magazine or a website. It looks like a real article, but it's not. It's paid content that cleverly mentions, you know, the drug or the car or whatever it is they're trying to advertise.
And then she divulged to the class, by the way, this class was a paid advertisement for Cialis.
You've been wondering why I'm sitting in a hot tub in the woods. Well,
it's the same with Outbrain or all the links.
Oh, the Taboola and Outbrain crap?
Yes.
You know, I fall for it every time. Because it's always really good link bait. Like, you won't believe what this celebrity looks like 20 years later. And I have
to. 20 clicks later, you still haven't seen the answer.
It's a slideshow that goes and goes and goes.
Never find the thing. I wonder if, you know, in college, I can remember taking a media class, and it was just like one of the electives that was available. And I learned a whole heck of a lot in that class about media literacy in general. And in high school, you have to take certain, depending on the state that you're in, you have to take certain classes to satisfy the requirements for the state in your education. And I really do feel like as part of a public education at this point, media literacy should be a,
I agree.
In you know, in the scope of things.
Clearly. That's a very good point.
Let's take a break.
Think about it. The combination of the two stats, 74% of Facebook users don't know that they're being targeted based on their own behavior. And then 90% of people can't recognize a ad from actual news. The Facebook is just rubbing their hands because they're like, yes.
Yes, opportunity. Step three, profit. Yeah. We, you know, you can't fix stupid. Nobody who watches our shows would have any trouble distinguishing between I didn't invent a word, but I like it. Distinguishing between advertising and content, would you? No, you would know the difference. By the way, we had a great week this week on Twit, and we've made a fascinating mini movie for your enjoyment. Watch.
Previously on Twit.
Getting to the news, there's nothing to see here. No, actually, wait a minute. There's someone sitting in between
us. There was no empty desk, so they'd like, just sit here. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, we figured we couldn't find an office for you to work in. So if you don't mind working between us, Father Robert Ballasaire.
It's the best place to be, really.
And we'll just do the show and pretend you're not
okay,
here.
Okay. If maybe Burke could grab me a sandwich. I'll be down with that.
Windows Weekly.
The death of Windows 7.
January 14th, 2020. That's the first patch Tuesday of January and the last time that they're going to issue for everyone free security updates to Windows 7.
After that, Windows 7 will be like XP and Orphan.
This week in computer hardware.
Cortana and Search.
Yeah, they needed some space. it's not working out. I saw Mary Jo Foley tweet about this, so I went to the Microsoft blogs. This is the actual graphic that Microsoft published to show you. Separation of Search and Cortana.
The handwritten.
With what looks like Microsoft Paint and yellow text and arrows that were drawn by hand.
We know Twit. Who uses Paint
Tech
now.
Just like you like it.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Burke, for the cupcake. Our 500th episode. Is Burke going to eat the cupcake? Is Kevin going to eat the cupcake? Or will, like, Leo eat the cupcake?
I'll eat it and I won't blow the candle out. Ow!
Hope everybody made a wish.
Happy 500th, and we're so glad Sebastian Peak is now part of This Week in Computer Hardware. It's great.
But I didn't get to eat the cupcake.
Sebastian, do you have over your right shoulder like 20 hard drives all connected up to one computer?
I wish. I wish they were hard drives.
What is that?
Those are graphics cards.
Oh, that's even crazier. Are you testing graphics cards?
Yes, I've been testing graphics cards.
Yikes. Do you enjoy doing that?
I mean, at first, yes. And then by the time you get done, like going through 10 games, 3 runs each at 3 different resolutions, and then overclocking, you're like, okay, no, I'd be okay if I never saw another graphics card again. And there are more on the way.
Announce, have you tried their new ray tracing card from, is it NVIDIA?
Yeah, the RTX cards. Yeah. I've just finished a review on this 2060 right when I got to CES. I was actually publishing that.
What do you think?
And it's beautiful. I mean, what I'm waiting for is what NVIDIA calls DLSS. Because you can do hardware ray tracing. They have these tensor cores for ray tracing. And right now they have the only hardware that can do that with these RTX series cards. But they have this deep learning super sampling technology that uses AI to kind of draw the frame that you're viewing, and it poses a significantly less overhead to your hardware. So the potential is to be able to do higher frame rates with the same kind of beautiful like lighting effects you get from ray tracing using deep learning, using these cards and other cards. So we saw a demo of that at CES. Actually, NVIDIA had RTX cards running the new 3D Mark Port Royal demo. That's going to be the standard demo, at least for a while, that allows you to actually test ray tracing, which we didn't even get until January 8th. So I was at CES watching it for the first time because I didn't have a preview copy. And right next to it was a pre-release copy of the same benchmark running DLSS, and it was running at a much higher frame rate and looked just as good. So it actually looked slightly better because they were able to do things like they can train it to identify the edges of objects. So the edges were really sharp. And then if you looked at just regular ray tracing with standard temporal anti-aliasing, it kind of makes the whole screen look a little bit soft, a little bit blurred. So the DLSS version was much sharper and was running at a high frame rate. So that's really exciting.
I understand ray tracing, and in the past, it generates a great result, but it's so compute intensive. It literally imagines from a light source, it traces the ray of light and imagines at each point what that's going to look like. And you can imagine how long that takes, but they're doing it in real time.
Yeah. That's the amazing thing. Think about just a few years ago when they would be running like rendering farms at a movie studio to do 5 seconds of film. And now you can do it in real time because they have dedicated hardware for it.
Will there be games that use this?
Yeah, there already are. Battlefield 5 is the poster child right now for ray tracing because you can enable it. And it does look amazing. Like the parts of it that keep on or that are shown as being very obvious examples of it are always things like water.
Yeah.
Water reflections, light reflections on like shiny surfaces like chrome or like the side of a car when there's an explosion, then you can see like exactly how the lighting would really fall. And it's very convincing, especially when you look at it side by side with standard lighting techniques that have been used in games for many years. But it is extremely hard.
So the 2080 and the 2080 Titanium do support ray tracing and DLSS.
Yes, and actually, even this little 2060 behind me, even that does. Wow. And that's sort of their mid-range, high mid-range card. So it has the hardware capability of supporting ray tracing, but for the 2060 especially, it's going to be like a DLSS story where it is a ray tracing.
Deep learning DL super sampling.
Yes.
Is this just,
and they haven't gone into great detail about what exactly.
You throw AI in and everything's better kind of thing. Why do they call it DLSS with blockchain? Or is this actually really using deep learning to do a better job? What and how is it using deep learning?
Yeah, they haven't told us exactly how it works, but and it's kind of their own proprietary thing, obviously. But
they say it leverages a deep neural network to extract multi-dimensional features of the rendered scene and intelligently combine details from multiple frames to construct a high-quality final image.
I think if you read between the lines, what they're saying is it enables you to actually, in hardware, render at a lower resolution and then leverage this to display it at the higher resolution, which is why suddenly the frame count like goes way up. Your actual frame rate goes way up. I think in hardware, you're probably at like half resolution.
You know what the analog is of this? TVs are going to start doing this with upsampling. So in the past, when you upsampled from, 24 frames to 60 frames, you had to imagine, you interpolated what was the missing frames, and usually that was just duplicating previous frames. But I heard about this at CES. Scott Wilkinson told us about this. They're starting to use neural networks to actually try to, by training it with high-definition material, so it can learn what should be in between those frames when you upsample. So
that's kind of cool.
To it. Yeah.
I still can't watch a 60 frames per second film. And I remember there was this supposedly scary movie. It was like the horror movie that was really popular for a while. It was It Follows. And I sat down and was excited to watch this film with some friends. And I just spent pretty much the whole time griping about how it was in 60 frames per second and how that just made me think of it as like, I don't know, a TBS television show. And the scary movie did end up being that scary anyway, but like I don't want to take 24 and make it 60 frames per second because it just pulls me out of there's
Peter
something
Jackson's
about that.
A fan of this high frame rate stuff. And remember people complaining about The Hobbit, which was
I was one of them.
Gandalf's staff looked like, it was made out of plastic from Staffs R Us.
It came from Staffs R Us. And I boycotted that place. Yeah. I don't like
them. Like them.
Yeah.
So the DLSS basically replaces anti-aliasing in the same way. Okay, correct me if I'm completely nuts, Sebastian, but the same way that upscaling can be done better by training it, you could do anti-aliasing better by training a neural network to imagine what's in those jaggies.
That's the dream. And actually, thinking about TV technology, does this mean that we can use deep learning to finally eliminate these sort of terrible soap opera effect. Like when I
yes,
when I
that's have the point. Yes,
that smoothing enabled. Oh. It depending on the TV, some of them do an okay job, and some of them it's just weird warbly motion and just.
I notice it right away if you're seeing a movie and it looks like it was shot on video, you know, like a soap opera. You know, I personally notice it immediately. I know lots of people though that don't. I'll go into people's houses. In fact, over the holidays, I bet quite a few of you went in mom and dad's house and turned it off.
Get rid of that motion smoothing and that weird upsampling nonsense.
You see look, I do whatever Tom looks? Cruise tells me to do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What did he say? Turn it off, right?
Yeah. He had that little PSA. I kept waiting for the punchline. Like, what is he plugging? Like, no, it's really just a PSA.
Where's the Scientology in this? Where? All right.
Wait, Sebastian, for the DLSS, who does the training model? Is that done by NVIDIA or the game provider has to?
Well, that's a good question.
That is a good question. Training model. I don't know. I would assume that they had worked on it internally. They didn't say anything about it being developer level. However, I think that makes more sense because certain games like Shadow of the Tomb Raider, that's a like coming, but it hasn't been released yet. Yet NVIDIA was showing like they've probably partnered with 3D Mark to have this Port Royal demo with the option enabled. So at this point, I'm sure it is just a matter of actually like having teams work on this, implement it within games, and that probably fall on the game developer, I imagine.
You. Yeah, but I'm guessing some game developers won't have access to the farms in order to do the training model because that's the training part is the intensive part. Once it's trained, you can deploy it on lower hardware. And so I'm guessing NVIDIA has a farm that they then rent out to the game developers for them to train their models so they can work better on their cards. So that sounds like another source of revenue for them.
Yeah. I wonder if it's part of like GameWorks going forward. If this is one of those things where you can sort of buy into their ecology and say, I want to use like their hair effects and this, and also implement DLSS in my game.
You know what might be driving this is server-side gaming. Because the whole point, or one of the points of DLSS is you render, and the reason it's faster frame rate, you render a lower quality, faster frame rate image and then clean it up with DLSS to make it look spectacular. That's exactly what you'd want if you were doing gaming on the server side. You'd want low latency, low quality images that you send to the playing device. But then if the playing device had the ability to clean it up, that would be the best of both worlds, right? You get great optics and low latency. I don't know. I'm making this up. I don't know. It shows you how much money there is in gaming, though, that this is all this fancy technology is for gaming.
It'd also be lock-in and harder to port.
Oh, who cares? That's all, NVIDIA doesn't. They want everybody just to use NVIDIA cards.
AMD will care.
Yeah, that's the only Radeon cares. Yeah we know. This is all a lock-in for NVIDIA, right? But every card does this. Every company does this. How many games you buy this? It works better with Radeon.
Yeah, there are fewer of those.
Are they?
For sure.
Yeah,
but. There are quite a few more. I know it was one of those things in our industry where there's been a lot of controversy about sort of GameWorks and how NVIDIA had an advantage there and that so many games, especially in games benchmarks, when new graphics cards come out, we run benchmarks, we release results, and then people point to them and say, but NVIDIA was, helping them and they were, helping develop this game and there's an advantage on the NVIDIA hardware because of GameWorks. So
it's no accident that NVIDIA makes the Shield, is it? And in fact, offers a streaming gaming service over it. Out of Sync explains it. DLSS is pre-computed for each game by NVIDIA and distributed through driver updates. So they're doing the work. You know what you do?
Can't imagine.
You run it at a very high quality, and you run it at a very low quality, and then you train the neural network. This is what you want. This is where you're going from this point.
It's the 10-year challenge.
Ah,
it's the 10-year challenge.
That's right.
They show a 1997 game and a 2007 game.
Look like that. I want Minecraft to look like that. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. We love ZipRecruiter. We've posted jobs on ZipRecruiter. We got a job right now. I won't say. Actually, I shouldn't say. Never mind. It's not your job, John. It's not your job, Kirsten. Not my job. It might be my job. Posted on ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is the best way to hire qualified candidates fast. You know what's smart? I'll tell you what's smart. Kicking off 2019 by planning out which roles your business needs to hire for. You know what else is smart? Starting the new year off strong by going to ZipRecruiter.com/twit to get those people. See, ZipRecruiter is completely different from those other job sites. Of course, we've always mentioned the fact you post once on ZipRecruiter. It goes to 100-plus job sites with one click. Gets your job out to the maximum people. But the other thing ZipRecruiter does, they find qualified candidates for you. Their powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to identify people with the right skills, education, and experience, then actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. It just works. It's number one rated by employers in the U.S. from among all the hiring sites on Trustpilot. Over 1,000 reviews. We use it. We used it. And we continue to use it because it's a great way to find the best people. Figure out who you need to hire to take your business to the next level in 2019. And right now, Twit listeners can try ZipRecruiter free at our exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/twit. 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 The smartest way to hire. I didn't expect to talk about the 2080 and all of this, and but I'm glad we did. This is really interesting stuff. Good review on PC Per, benchmarks and all, talking about what the these new cards do. And they're only, oh, I don't know, a couple of $1,000. How much would it cost me to get a 2080?
A 2080 is $699. Oh, some of the cards out there, like on Newegg, are a little bit more. But I was actually seeing two last night that were selling for that $699 retail. That's the MSRP if you buy it direct from NVIDIA.
So I didn't think NVIDIA made cards. I thought they were like ARM fabless, but they are now making cards.
Yeah, I don't know if they're making them. They do sell them. They have their own Founders Edition is what they call it. And so the card behind me is a Founders Edition. That's their new cooler design. And actually, interestingly, AMD is starting to sell their own cards. This new Radeon Vega 7 that they have coming out is going to be sold on AMD.com. with their own reference design. So
is there any reason to buy it from them instead of, I don't know, you know, somebody else?
Anyone else? Yeah. Anyone else? I think the reason would be just,
I was thinking Gigabyte, I guess.
Price. I mean, when companies sell directly, like during last year, during the mining craze, when you could not find a graphics card if you wanted it, and when they would show up at retail, you were seeing crazy prices of $1,000 or more for like a 1080 from NVIDIA. And then you'd go to NVIDIA.com and they would, for brief windows of time, have them in stock and you were buying them at just MSRP. So for things like that, especially if you like just the stock reference design. In the past, reference designs for graphics cards were pretty bad, very loud, blower style coolers and things. They've gotten pretty advanced. Like AMD is showing a 3-fan, very kind of nice, modern looking cooler. NVIDIA has these nice dual fan coolers that are very quiet. So if you like the look of these things, then there's one reason, just aesthetics alone.
Nolan Bushnell, we've had him on Triangulation. He drew, I wonder if we saved that. He drew a Pong on our back wall in the old studio. I hope somebody saved that. Now he's making games for the Amazon Echo, voice-activated games.
The thing is, the newscaster voice that we've heard does not give me, you know, faith about games from the Amazon Echo. Although, I saw Rye Christ on Twitter's CNET person, and he does a lot of smart home stuff, and I think he was at this conference or this meetup or whatever it was, and I saw some of the stuff coming out of it, and it did sound interesting, some of the things that are being worked on there and potentially like what the Amazon Echo could do in the future, because I don't know, there are a lot of people with these devices, and when we give more features and more fun things that we can do with them, I think that it helps the sort of smart speaker market overall, and it gets people used to having these devices in their home, which only results in more companies paying attention to them, which means that I get to buy new fun smart home tech. So like it's a good thing all around, even if it's just so that kids can play, I don't know, what is it, Candyland board games with the Amazon Echo.
I played Jeopardy, and you could play 20 questions. This sounds, I think there's potential here. If you really knew what you were doing and you really thought about the challenges of a voice assistant. So the first game that's just going to come out in March is called Saint Noir. It's a voice-activated murder mystery game that challenges you to solve a murder by interviewing a full cast of characters. That sounds kind of interesting, doesn't it?
The murder is Bruce Wayne's parents, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Wait,
You're being serious. Okay.
No.
Yeah.
There was an earlier game called The Wayne Investigation, which was a Batman-themed adventure to let you investigate the murder of Bruce Wayne's parents. That's already out. There are Amazon Echo interactive toys. There's an Echo Escape Room Challenge from Stoked Skills. My problem is you feel stuck.
Yeah.
Like you gotta keep interacting. You can't like put it down and come back to it.
Yeah. And also, I don't know, I am a little weirded out sometimes whenever companies are just like, let's throw our product into this experience that already exists. And it doesn't make sense other than to just do it.
They have to reinvent. They really have to think of something different.
Because the fun thing about a murder mystery game, if you're going like all out, is it's one of those like dinner party things where everybody dresses up and everybody has a little character card and everybody, and you're interacting with like human beings. So why would we have just, you know, four people sitting around a board game and we're all just talking to the Echo instead of talking to each other? That kind of takes the fun out of what a murder mystery game usually is.
How about this? So it is a board. No, I'm looking at it. You buy for $40, you have to buy the board game, which is kind of like Clue, right? And then the Echo is a kind of companion to solving this mystery.
So this is like a VHS game for
2019. Yes.
Is it replayable?
Should be. Why wouldn't it be? It'd be a shame to spend $40.
Exactly.
And you could play it once.
I guess they change the murderer every time or something. I don't know.
They got six games total scheduled for release this year. There is also a drinking game.
Oh. Well, those inherently become fun, right?
I play into that.
Echo? Hurry another drink. This is fun.
What's your name again, Siri? Oh, no.
That's Siri. Not
right. Does this mean that we could get like a chat roulette for smart speakers?
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Oh, God. That would be good because...
Is that still... Can you still do that?
You know, maybe I'm weird, but I heard...
Yeah. We know that.
Can do, you know, like voice gaming. I'm thinking... Text-based adventures. Think about it.
Yes. Those could be a dungeon master.
Proceed. I'm in the bathroom brushing my teeth. Proceed north. You cannot go north. All right, east.
I love it.
You encountered a locked door.
Sebastian, you could write this. It's not hard to write these.
There are a couple of those that are like that. I talked with Megan Rooney, I think, on iOS today.
Well, Bandersnatch is the Netflix movie. Is that? I haven't watched it yet because, I'm afraid of getting trapped.
But the movie is about a choose your own adventure game, so it would be just like
watching a game about a game. About
chat roulette is definitely still a site. I didn't realize
you just went to chat roulette.
I did. Yes, I was curious. So there are a few games. I talked to Megan Maroney before. I think it was on iOS today about some of the games that are on the Echo, and there actually are some interesting ones and pretty good ones that are essentially text-based adventures where you're sort of, you know, given the option to say, I want to do this or I want to do that. But they're not, I think if it's built, you know, sort of from Amazon's perspective, knowing what technologies they have available, it's going to be better. So I wouldn't be, you know, completely against trying something like this. I just don't want to make something less fun by adding an Echo to it. And like you said, feeling trapped. I think that's a really good
way to put it. But today's generation is not going to play Zork. They're not going to sit at a command line and type commands. But I could totally see them saying, Echo, head north, and then hearing a description. That sounds like fun, actually.
Definitely like a time, though. Like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, but three-hour game?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, you should be able to stop and pick it up.
Yeah.
Zork was a lot of fun. You'd have to figure out how to pronounce XYZZY and Plug. That would be fun.
You just did?
Oh, that's how you pronounce it. That's how you pronounce it.
Someone in the chat said, Echo, go north, order a case of toilet paper from Amazon.
You can do it all. Shop.
Yeah, you pause in the middle of your choose your own adventure game. You just want to get some new dog treats. And then it's like, oh, no, sorry, that is not a command in this game.
So
I bet there would be like interstitial advertising, like right in the middle of your game. Just suddenly, you know, I'm going east. And also on sale this week on Amazon.com.
Have you seen the new Man in the High Tower, or is it Castle, whatever the show?
No, is it good?
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying that's the ad. No, see, you see, that's sucked how me right it is. I can't tell the difference between content.
90% of podcast hosts can't tell the difference between an ad.
At least 25%.
Yeah. And they're going to use your voice for these games for training.
Yeah, of course they are. That's the thing why the 10-year challenge thing, even if Facebook's not doing that, every bit of data you give any of these companies is grist for the mill. They use it all. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off, Micah.
I was doing another. I said, have you seen the new ZipRecruiter website?
No, I haven't. Where is it? Oh, I'm sorry. I get sucked in by that stuff.
You know, YouTube does that when you play a video. Sometimes you get a survey instead of an ad. And it says, have you seen advertisements for XYZ or whatever? It shows they can see how effective their online advertising is.
They have to be really careful with that. There really is a fine line between annoying and something you could tolerate.
Yeah. But since, you know, Amazon is getting to get into the ad business where a lot more of the revenue is from ads, I wouldn't be surprised if they did something like this.
Here's an alert from Microsoft. If you're still using Windows 10 Mobile, you should switch immediately to iPhone or Android. Sorry. Somebody apparently is. Microsoft says they're going to kill off support December of 2019. Oh, well, you got some time.
Yeah. This, you know, maybe something will happen. It'll come back before December.
Wow.
It'll get popular again.
That's kind of sad. Windows Phone actually was really, I thought, innovative, clever. And it's a shame that it didn't succeed. But so Paul Thurrock caught this one. A change to the, of course, the headline in typical Thurrock style, Windows 10 Mobile is dead. And then I don't know what this picture means.
There are a lot. Those are several different memes all together in one, and those are like shocked memes. So they're all like, "What?
Oh, I get it. I get it." So Pikachu and Care Bear and the girl and the monkey.
I think that's Jerry the mouse.
Jerry the mouse. Oh, yeah, of Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Boy, he has a drinking problem or something. He doesn't.
He was playing that Echo game.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Jerry. I used to be Jerry. You know me? Remember me with Tom?
That guy walking to the airport. Those were kind of like
fake shocks.
That was Jerry. And the girl that's famous too. Oh, this is like the X Factor. I get it.
Yeah, and they're all kind of like fake shocked. So it's like you shouldn't be shocked by this, but you are. Those are the different memes there.
This is why we need millennials around to explain this stuff.
This is why you can't replace me at the ZipRecruiter host.
We need you. Yes.
That's like when I hear like a celebrity died, and I'm like, they were still alive?
Someday that'll be me, Wesley. Leo was still alive?
Yeah.
Someday. I don't know. Now you heard the warning. And we did see Sebastian, you and Patrick talking about Cortana giving up as well.
Yeah. You know, I was one of those people who jumped on Windows Phone when the really nice Lumia phones started coming out. And I think it was a Lumia 900. I bought one of those. I jumped off iOS and went to Windows Mobile, and it was okay at first. And there was the promise of all these apps that were going to be coming. Like, okay, I'm going to be getting eBay. I'm going to be getting this. I'm going to be getting that. And I'll have everything I need. And then one of the areas that never really came was like chat app support. Back when HipChat was still more widely used, before Slack kind of took over, and I was waiting for like that kind of support, which never came. And then eBay was released, but then never updated. And then like 6 or 8 months later, it still wasn't updated. And I finally just left. Like, I loved the interface. I loved the tiles. Like, I could organize it exactly how it seemed to make the most sense to me for like one-handed use, having like the size and the location of the tiles wherever I wanted on the screen, which you couldn't do with Android or iOS. And there wasn't good app support. There never was good app support. And Microsoft was paying developers to make these keystone apps like Instagram.
They actually had to pay people. They had to pay them.
Yeah, and then they weren't paying them to keep them updated. Like, okay, we made the app. Here it is. And then they would just sit there for a year without an update, without feature updates. So it's sad, but it's
deserved.
It makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Because if they'd had the app support, at some point a mobile phone is just a platform for apps.
Yeah.
And I can go between iOS and Android seamlessly for the most part. I mean, there's the whole iMessage thing, but as far as apps go, they're basically a parody at this point. A lot of the major apps are just about the same on either platform. But we have platforms that really did a lot with like UI, actual usability, user experience, like Palm and Windows Phone. And now we have like elements of Palm at least live on with the iPhone X, where you have like the gesture-based interface and sliding up from the bottom. That's all stuff we saw with the Palm
Pre.
That's
true, isn't it? Yeah, it's one of the reasons I liked the Pre so much. I liked
the Pre was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, the Pre was a loss, although doesn't it live on in some TVs? Who is it, LG that bought the Palm
LG
OS?
LG has WebOS, supposedly. Yeah. It has like these cards at the bottom of the screen that can flip up, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. You need touch.
And I gotta
Windows
say,
Phone was a great reimagining.
As the old social media manager for HipChat, you guys were extremely vocal in terms of your demand for Windows 10 apps. Windows mobile apps.
Yeah, I probably one of them.
I used to get tweets on that every single day. When's the app coming? When's the app coming?
Did HipChat not have a Windows Phone app?
We eventually made a beta something port or something like that.
Was it hard? Web-based. Why didn't you?
The market share wasn't there. Even though the people were vocal, they just didn't care about it to even make something that was passable.
That's a common problem. People fall for the vocal minority, but it's 10 people just making a lot of noise, especially with social media. You can really amplify 10 people now. And it'd be easy to be fooled by that.
Amplify 10 people to do the Tide Pod Challenge.
Oh, God. Are you sad about HipChat kind of going away, being sucked up and absorbed by Slack?
In a way, yes. But, you know, they just wrote out a new logo. And with that announcement, they pledged a simpler UI.
Everybody so unhappy with the new Slack icon.
I was hoping we were going to talk about
that. That's like people were so bad. We should mention Slack's a sponsor. HipChat was a sponsor. Atlassian's a sponsor. You're all sponsors. But, this new, I don't know, can you see this new? It's like people are upset about the icon. Like
that's because humans don't like change, and everyone says they love change, and I like it when things are dynamic and things change. But nobody really like it's not at our base instincts to enjoy
just
change.
An icon,
right?
Although having said that, why change it?
Oh, well, apparently like you said, the new commitment to everything, and
they're going public, and they're like, I guess freshening it up. I don't know why you wouldn't want that. Like, why wouldn't you go with what people know?
Like, it looks like brand Smurf sweat.
Well, so it was a legitimate, you know, the reasoning behind it was especially because of the way that the logo was set up. I think they said that it had like 16 different colors in it because of the overlaying bands. And then also there was no complete and like they didn't have a place where you could go and say, okay, this is exactly what I'm supposed to do with the logo.
Right.
And this is how it's set up. And so depending on who was putting the logo where and what, it all looked very different. And so they were trying to sort of bring things in and make a standard design.
That is true. Yeah.
And pull it in and make it easier. So I understand that. And with it going public, that makes sense.
That's a challenge. That's a challenge with the Twit logo. I had good advice, thank you, from designers who said, you make sure it looks good in all sizes, that you could stitch it on a hat, you know, that you could put it on a t-shirt. Those are things you really, and I bet you Slack, they just said, this is pretty, which it was, but they weren't thinking
about
it.
And it was before it was public. I mean, like it was, they made it before the app was finished, I think they said.
Oh, interesting.
So the logo was sort of put together just on a whim, and it sort of came second. But yeah, so like, I understand the change, but anytime, I remember whenever the Twitter changed from a star to a heart, or when the typeface changes in an app or what have you. Yeah, it's just like we don't like that change because we're used to what it was before. There are some legitimate critiques of it, and I understood those. But yeah, the rage always seems to come forth, and it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're going to be like, totally hold my beer when they change the app, because if you're mad about their logo, they're going to be changing the interface. And it's apparent that Microsoft Teams is really starting to get market share. And so they are going to try to reposition their app to be simpler, easier to navigate. And
oh,
to
interesting.
More people.
So they feel challenged by Teams. Now Teams does have some features that missing that Slack has, but apparently the adoption on Teams has been phenomenal because it's free.
Yeah,
and Slack has a free tier, but you think it's simpler?
Yeah, it's easier to use. It's just because it is limited in features. I guess that's why. Yeah. It feels like Slack's been built by committee from their users, which is a good thing in terms of adoption. But now that they're going to the masses, they're like people are being confused by the interface and don't know how to use it because they haven't been there from the beginning. It's like if you picked up an iPhone today as opposed to an iPhone from when they first came out and you follow them through all their iterations, you kind of get graduated from one level to the next. And so it makes sense as they add more features. But once you're trying to be introduced to a new audience, it seems like there's a lot there. So it's that equivalent.
What does IBM use? Don't say Lotus Notes.
So we have Same Time, which is built in-house.
It's an in-house app. Okay.
But it just got sold off to another company, okay. I believe. But we also use Slack.
I love Slack. We looked at, so when HipChat went away, we looked at Teams. We looked at a bunch of stuff. We looked at Matrix, Riot, which is an open source. You run your own Matrix server and Riot's the client. We looked at Slack, and everybody really wanted to use Slack. I mean, Slack, what Slack has going for it is people love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even in like personal aspects, it's not just for teams that are, you know, companies working on things. Plenty of people have created Slacks just to hang out with their friends from, you know what I mean, all over. So
interesting. So Teams is going to be a threat. And now you know something, Wesley, about the redesign that I didn't know about, or is this just...
It was in their announcement about the logo. They're talking about they're going to be changing their interface.
Interesting. Snapchat did that. You do that at your peril. Remember Snapchat, I think, really took a hit from the redesign. People hated
it. Yeah, I think that was especially because celebrities got involved and said, oh, I hate the way that it looks now and I'm not using it ever again.
Was that Kourtney Kardashian?
I don't know. I was thinking
Chloe.
Of, I think, didn't Rihanna say no
Rihanna.
To...
Well,
no, Rihanna.
Rihanna. Yeah. I don't know.
Liana. I don't know that.
Somebody in the chat room said, you're millsplaining. You're millennium splaining to me. Yeah. I need to be millsplain.
Millsplain it. Millsplain it. I can't remember who it was, but perhaps one of the Kardashians did. I have no idea. But whenever the celebrities hop on that and say, oh, you know, I don't like this thing, then there are people who follow in suit. And the fact is, Snapchat has never made any sense ever. So I don't like them changing the way that the app was set up. It's just like, oh, well, this is just another thing that I don't understand.
I thought
how
it was an intentional feature that they figured the best way to go viral with an app is to make it completely opaque on how to use it. But the one kid who figured out how to use it would get all this status by showing all his friends. And then they'd get status by showing their friends. And it would make it go viral. I thought it was like a brilliant marketing ploy. But maybe
That's clever. When I started working at iMore, the way that I got that job was actually writing this huge guide on Snapchat.
Uh-huh. You millsplained Snapchat to Renee Ritchie.
I had to millsplain it to myself, though, because I hadn't really used the app before. And so I asked some of my friends who are regular Snapchat users, like, hey, am I forgetting anything? And they're like, yeah, they're like all of these other
There's
things.
All this stuff.
Gestures. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah. So the old Slack logo, and now I'm kind of obsessed by this, looked like the hashtag. It was like a number sign. And now it looks like, I'm telling you, Smurf sweat. It looks like, I don't know what's going on. It's... But again, it's just a logo, guys. But I understand why people get upset when change happens. So it'll be interesting to watch. Oh, here's their original. This is the problem that you were talking about. Yeah, it just looks
like
different.
Partially translucent. Yeah, nobody
can. Yeah, nobody can reproduce it. That is a good point. Yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
And how, see, those images there, like what different people within the team have done, and you go, right. What's even going on?
But see, here's the interesting thing. I didn't read this blog post. I just saw one day I woke up and my phone looked different. And that's all. I didn't. You can write this, but nobody's. I mean, you have to somehow millsplain it to everybody. I love this new term. By the way, at the end of the blog post, TLDR, we changed the logo. But TLDRs go at the top, kids. Just saying.
They didn't have a mill to explain it.
That is Micah Sargent. We're going to get you to reboot, Micah. I don't know what happens to your internet. Maybe your neighbors are watching Bandersnatch or something. I don't know. There's something. Oh, he's like, it's degrading fast. Micah is at chihuahua.coffee. And we love having him on the show whenever we can get him. Sebastian Peake is our newest player. He's the host of This Week in Computer Hardware with Patrick Norton, EIC, editor-in-chief at PC Perspective. Thrilled to have you. Thank you for joining us, Sebastian.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And from Austin, Texas, he works at IBM in developer relations. This is good. It's like the dating game. I'm introducing Bachelor number 3, coming to us from Austin, Texas, Wesley Faulkner. Our show today brought to you by my new favorite VPN, ExpressVPN. I know a lot of you are on a quest to find a virtual private network, a way to surf securely, safely, privately, whether you're at an open Wi-Fi access spot, even from home, because you know your ISP is looking over your shoulder, ExpressVPN is the best. It's secure. It protects you and your data. They have the very best privacy policy I've ever seen. No logging. They don't pay, they don't track in any way. They don't record your history. You are being tracked by social media sites, by marketing companies, by your mobile provider, by your internet provider, and by the hacker sitting next to you at the coffee shop. So take back your privacy and security with ExpressVPN. It couldn't be easier. They've got apps for every platform. One click turns on the VPN. I think one of the best things about ExpressVPN is their speed. They have servers all over the world, and they're very fast servers. So they're fast enough to watch streaming video. They're fast enough to do everything you do. You're not going to pay that VPN penalty. I really appreciate that. ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your browsing by encrypting your data, hiding your public IP address. You could surf safely on public Wi-Fi. TechRadar rated it number 1. And by the way, if at any time, you got 30 days, you don't like it, your money back. 30-day money-back guarantee. Less than $7 a month. That's very affordable, and they make enough money so they don't have to do anything bad. They protect you. They will not inject content into your VPN stream or anything like that. Protect your online activity today. Find out how you can get 3 extra months free. This makes it even more affordable with a 1-year package if you go to expressvpn.com/twit. This is VPN done right. expressvpn.com/twit. Get 3 extra months with your 1-year subscription. ExpressVPN.com/twit. Did you see this Japanese hotel that tried to replace its staff with robots? Robot hotel. No. Oops, let's close this box asking me to pay for the Wall Street Journal, which I do. Robot hotel loses love for robots. The robot revolution will have to wait at the Henna Hotel in Japan. They're laying off the droids because turns out the robots aren't the best at hospitality.
Are there robots dinosaurs? Why is there a dinosaur at the top?
That's a great question. No one knows. I don't know.
I saw
that could be part of the problem.
If the robots look like that, yes.
Yeah.
Our robots are raptors. The hotel has fired half of the 243 robots because they create work rather than reducing it. One staff member said, "It's easier now that we're not being frequently called by guests to help with problems with the robots."
Can you imagine? This robot's stuck in my room and I can't get it to leave.
Get rid of it. It fell over.
Maybe they should get Neil Bushnell to get like his...
Chuck E. Cheese.
His robots from Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah, there you go.
Welcome to our hotel. Did you see, Sebastian, a bunch of hospitality robots at CES? Because according to this article in the journal, there were.
I was mired in meetings from hotel to hotel.
So and they were with real people, not robots?
They were. I think they were real. I mean, I could have been fooled.
Did you speak but to no any raptors? Darn.
No, there were no.
Here's a robot, which the Wall Street Journal points out wasn't operational, sitting at a player piano in the lobby of the Sasebo Hotel. There's a
is
hotel
it like
called
a vacuum on top.
It looks like a Roomba.
It's a Roomba attached to a body. There's a hotel apparently called Strange Hotel. There's the Space Egg Robot Hotel Porter, introduced by Alibaba. The Strange Hotel attempted
Sorry,
to
that's some serious what native marketing right there.
Yeah. The Space Egg Robot Hotel Porter. Strange Hotel's attempt to add more and more contraptions fizzled. One goal was to overcome labor shortages by using machines for tasks like luggage storage to mixing cocktails to cleaning. The hotel is next to a theme park in a rural area with a severe shortage of workers. They aim to lure foreign tourists by tapping into the image of Japan, the country that has produced smart toilets and hologram girlfriends, as a technologically advanced nation.
Have you seen that Russian robot?
No.
They should have used that one.
What does it do?
So the Russia said that it was the most advanced robot that they've ever created, and they submitted it to some sort of contest.
It was a man in a suit.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It's very advanced. Advanced high-tech robot. Here he is. Look how realistic he looks. He speaks many languages. He can walk. It's clearly a man in a suit. It's not even a very good costume.
And they were trying to play it off as if it wasn't a man. Like, that wasn't just, this was, this
it's supposed
was
to be a
to
real robot.
People. Wow.
I've seen better cosplay at a Comic-Con. This is terrible. Oh
no.
Man. I'm just fixed by this video right now.
This kind of breaks my heart a little bit.
It's a stereotype of Russia. Yeah, we invented TV. We invented the space travel. We invented robots. Is man in suit. Disney lost $1 billion in streaming last year, partly because of Hulu. They have a ownership in Hulu and something called BAM Tech. BAM Tech. They are planning on launching a streaming service later this year, but maybe, I don't know. Hulu was a primary contributor to a $580 million loss in investments in the fiscal year that ended September 30th. Another $469 million in their direct-to-consumer segment. BAM Tech is the streaming technology that powers ESPN+, among others.
Okay.
Disney.
You know, Disney shouldn't have spent so much money on Lucasfilm, you know?
No, that was a good thing.
Look at where it got.
Now, what I saw, and I didn't read it because I don't follow this stuff, an article today that said the Star Wars franchise is in trouble. Do we know what that means?
Well, they just canceled another project. There was an open world game, I believe, that EA.
Solo Lost was the first Star Wars movie ever to lose money. This is from, I don't read this regularly, but Cosmic Book News. Star Wars and Marvel Comics sales drop. Aquaman did all right. Trouble in Paradise. So maybe they shouldn't have bought it.
This is the problem.
What's that?
EA has made two games for Star Wars in the past.
Terrible games.
And they had a 10-year license, and they've made two games.
Oh, wow.
10 years, two games. Not a very good ratio. Who was it? Was it Netflix that said their number one competitor is not any of these guys? It's
Fortnite.
Yeah. The kids, they don't watch TV like they used to. They're playing Fortnite.
So Twitch, why do they say Fortnite instead of Twitch? Is it because they stream other places than just on Twitch?
Well, that's interesting. You think people are watching Fortnite, not playing Fortnite?
Mm. Oh, is that what they mean? I didn't know what Netflix meant by that.
I don't know if they meant
streaming competitor, as in watching Fortnite versus...
Yeah, people only have a certain amount of screen time. Netflix says Fortnite is a bigger rival than HBO. The online shooter accounts for an enormous amount of consumers' screen time. I bet you you're right that some of that's Twitch, watching people play. This is a shareholder letter that Netflix sent out on Thursday. Quote, we earn consumer screen time, both mobile and television, away from a very broad set of competitors we compete with and lose to Fortnite more than HBO. There are thousands of competitors in this highly fragmented market vying to entertain consumers.
There's a big price difference between HBO and Fortnite.
Yeah, Fortnite's free.
Yeah.
Unless you want that dance move.
The floss.
I bet. Wait a minute. Mill, explain the floss to me, because I bet you. Can you do it?
Yes. Yes.
Let's see. Stand up.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Floss.
No,
show me how to do it. Here.
Oh my lord. No. Okay. Both hands. Take them out, and then we stick our hip to the other side, and then you floss it through, and then you switch, and then you floss it through.
Do it fast, though, because when you do it,
yes, then you do it super fast, and that's whenever it looks cool, and it's fun. But
that's Fortnite, the trick, by the way, which was explained to me by another millennial I know, because I know two. And the key is that the hips go opposite of the hands.
Yes.
See, my temptation, I would tend to do it in the same way, but
where you're going like one way.
That doesn't look right.
Yeah. So that's what makes it sort of look like an optical illusion. But
fascinating.
With Fortnite, you know, Netflix could only say that like Fortnite was a competitor in terms of playing the game if they were talking about Bandersnatch. You know what I mean? Like they haven't made games before. So I do feel like it's got to be about streaming there more than anything. Because so we've got millennials, sure, but now we've got that next generation called like post millennials and all that. So my siblings, my younger brother is a Twitch streamer of Fortnite and like does that sort of for a living.
For a living?
Yeah, wow. Right. Yeah. Like his rent and stuff is paid by playing that game, which I have no idea how any of it works. But my sister, most of the, television that she watches is actually our younger brother playing Fortnite. So apparently people do spend, you know, their free hours of screen time just watching people play video games.
I despair for our future.
Why not YouTube though? I would think YouTube is a natural competitor.
Yeah, that's because you're old. So
true. But see, they do stream on YouTube too, don't they? I mean, millennials can't you stream watch YouTube Fortnite wherever?
Gen Z watches their brother playing Fortnite.
That's what it is.
I think even YouTube is going to face a challenge with this younger generation, these 13-year-olds.
Well, now they've got TikTok, right?
But that'll last 2 years. That's not a dance. Be something else. Yeah, TikTok, by the way, is owned by a Chinese company. So if you're worried about privacy.
So they got Wesley's information and then everyone who's uploading videos to TikTok.
Are you seeing a lot of ads for TikTok in your streams, Wesley?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, tons of. Well, they're backed by a huge like chunk of money. They're part of the Vision Fund, so
they got some money. Yeah,
yeah. So
that's Sun Sun's Masayoshi Sun's multi-billion-dollar, which by the way is about 50% Saudi Arabia. So,
yep,
a poker playing robot is going to work for the Pentagon.
Are you too?
Yeah, it's either Intel or the Pentagon. In 2017, you may remember Libratus, which was a poker playing robot that defeated four of the best human players at No Limit Texas Hold'em. Libratus, which is Latin for balanced, was created by researchers from Carnegie Mellon to test ideas for automated decision making based on game theory. After he beat the poker players, the professor who led the project founded a startup called Strategy Robot. Late in August, the company received a 2-year contract of $10 million from the Army. I don't think it'll be playing poker, but who knows?
Strategy at what, though?
Maybe Fortnite.
Is this computer going to be like in charge of human lives, saying, you go over here, you do this?
Strategy That's Robot, scary. This is according to Wired, isn't the Pentagon's only new foray into AI-enhanced game theory. AI-enhanced game. They got so much money in the military that they can afford to do a lot of blue sky. You know, try everything. Like the men who stare at goats, right? It's, you know, just try it. Maybe it'll work. Michael Wellman, a professor at the University of Michigan, says his group's working on applying computational game theory to cybersecurity under the aegis of the Army. The breakthrough in poker was just...
You don't know all the rules, though. That's going to be hard. I don't see how you put that in.
The only way to win the game is not to play...
War Games.
Thank you.
For those who don't know that.
Name check. quick name check.
I didn't know.
What? That's actually segueing us to this Fast Company article about the Vision Fund and Masayoshi Son. It says, are you ready to live in Masa world? Oh, dear. I used to work for Son when he owned Ziff Davis. Briefly.
This article was extremely scary.
So tell us about it, Wesley.
Well, it's just he has a ton of money.
$100 billion.
But his power comes from the fact that he has money and influence. He has deep connections with world leaders. All these pivotal companies that he is under his umbrella, they make them work together. So they are a family, they call it. So they're in the umbrella. So they become interdependent on themselves. And so it kind of builds on itself. So he's trying to build the future that he wants from, and he's adding the pieces as he goes. And so, going back to TikTok, you're saying, oh, that'll be done. No, they will find a way to support each other so they can keep going. And so even if you think that it's something you don't want, they will make it happen.
Sun believes that robots will make us healthier and happier. He has long told people, I have a 300-year plan. I guess... Job one would be to live 300 years.
Yeah, I'm going, what?
Well, but that's not unusual for a Japanese industrialist. They do think more long term, right? It sounds like Sun is one of the believers, the true believers who thinks technology is the only way to save the world at this point.
Yeah, the scary thing about it is that he hires people who think like him.
Yeah.
Which means that... I'm using this wrong, but neurodiversity or diversity of thought is probably something that's not the best. So in terms of vetting, it could be like, for instance, WeWork is one of the companies listed, and it was recently released that the president of WeWork apparently owned a lot of the properties that WeWork was renting in order to have their offices. And so an environment like that.
Talk about double dipping. I mean, yeah. He's the landlord. WeWork's CEO is also WeWork's landlord.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
So if WeWork is losing money because they don't get enough people to it's fine. He still makes money.
Yeah. Yeah. This is really the key, you know. You gotta think like a spider. So this is this Fast Company article is good. They do, I think, graphics for each of his categories. Obsession number one is, as you said, real estate. Sun believes there's an opportunity to consolidate and automate the fractured world of real estate. So $20 billion in WeWork, for instance. Although I think he lowered that recently. Obsession number two, mobility. Transportation is moving from something individuals own to a service they rent on demand via technology. We're clearly seeing that move. Mm-hmm. So these are some of his investments. Uber, Grab, Didi Chuxing, which is the Chinese. Didi is the Chinese Uber. GM Cruise, that's their self-driving vehicles. Ola, which is the Uber of India. Manbang Group, which despite its name is about truck hailing. It probably means something different wherever Manbang is. Get Around, peer-to-peer car sharing, Park Jockey, parking reservations. You're going to have a problem with language, I think, is going to be a problem because things mean different things in different countries. Other obsessions. Let's see. What else? Maybe that's it. Oh, no. Here it is. Number three, commerce. He online purchases of goods and services will flourish in an AI-powered world. Maybe not. Maybe maybe all the people he disenfranchises won't have any money to spend on Flipkart brandless Zoom pizza, Alibaba food delivery, and on and on and on. Right? How? What happens when nobody has a job?
Well, that's whenever what? That's when we start to have universal basic income.
Yeah, this is what bothers me about universal basic income. It's people like SunSign are saying, shoot, we're going to run out of customers. Why don't we just give them a little bit of the money back?
Mm-hmm.
You owe your soul to the company store. We'll give them 10%. We'll keep 90%. Everybody will be happy. Well, a good article. Highly recommend it.
It's a long read, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, if he hasn't invested in Fortnite, though, then he's not gonna win.
Tim Sweeney's the future, man. Forget SunSun. It's all about Tim Sweeney. He's got the money now. That's what I like. Frankly, that's what I like about this space is you really can't. You can, be a big thinker like SunSun or Jeff Bezos, but you can't really predict what's going to happen. You don't know.
Yeah, Fortnite could just be this year's Pokemon Go. And look at what happened to their...
Nothing happened to Pokemon Go. It's still a vast...
That was offensive.
Now I'm offended. Will you mill-splain to him why Pokemon Go is still relevant in this day and age?
Get your Pokeball out and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I have a Pokeball somewhere. I've been playing it under the table the whole time. So to me, I'm really actually thinking that the big thing, we ain't seen nothing yet. Pokemon Go came out July 2016. Remember in the first 6 months, you'd see like hordes of people appear out of nowhere because they're all catching some imaginary augmented reality thing that no one except them can see. We were in San Diego that summer, and there's people on the median strip, the lawn in between the two roads. There's like 1,000. It looks like Woodstock. And we're going by, and we go, oh, there's two gyms there. They're playing Pokemon Go. That ain't nothing. Get ready. You heard it here first. Sometime this year, Warner Brothers and Niantic, the creators of Pokemon Go, are going to release the Harry Potter game.
Yeah, that's gonna get people.
If you think Pokemon Go was crazy, because what is the number of people who are Harry Potter fans compared to the number of Pokemon fans?
Let me look that up really quick. I'll ask Cortana.
She'll refer you to a. But no, I honestly think that that's going to be a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. We don't yet know how crazy that'll be.
Yeah, you do the with the Bird Box challenge with the Pokemon.
I do. Just I like, put on a blindfold.
Blindfold and try to find Pokemon.
Catch them. I know they're there somewhere. You now know when you go down the street because everybody now in Pokemon Go is throwing curveballs. You can tell. It used to be you couldn't be sure because people are just tapping their phones. But everybody's doing this. Just so you know, Sebastian, if you see somebody spinning their finger and then going like that on their phone.
Okay.
They're playing Pokemon.
While driving.
While driving. Not that I would ever do that. Much. Our show today brought to you by Atlassian. We were just talking about HipChat. And by the way, did you see Atlassian's quarterly results and their stock price? They're going through the roof. I'm not surprised. Atlassian is the collaboration software company that empowers teams all around the world. We use their tools like crazy. If you're in agile development, of course, you know about Jira. Jira is kind of the backbone. But then there's Bitbucket for code, building, and shipping. We use Confluence to document our systems. That's for collaboration. Jira Service Desk, SourceTree. They acquired Trello. Everybody loves Trello for project management. Then, of course, you have for ops, you've got Jira Ops, Ops Genie status page. They're putting together an incredible lineup. Their software tools are designed to manage complex collaboration. And by the way, not just for developers. Atlassian offers an affordable, reliable suite of tools that all interoperates for teams of any size, from DevOps to Agile, from IT apps to Ops to ITSM and whatever's next. They're there with the tools you need to solve problems, to respond, coordinate efforts, to organize. Actually, the bottom line, to communicate. Your team can choose the tools that are right for your current framework, trusting that as you grow, they will grow with you. And, of course, it all integrates seamlessly with Jira and Confluence. That keeps you moving fast, keeps you from bouncing around from platform to platform. It's all in there. It's all working. Look at the companies that use Atlassian. We use it like crazy. Really great stuff. The tools for your IT team are easy and, by the way, free to try when you go to Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com. Atlassian's knocking it out of the park, and we're really glad to be partnering with them and to use their tools every single day. Atlassian for IT, Atlassian.com. Unleash your IT team with Atlassian's stellar collaboration software tools. When you worked at HipChat, were you working for Atlassian, Wesley?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I was their social media manager for HipChat.
You gotta. Yeah, I don't know what it was like. Was it good working there? Because I really admire that company so much. You can be honest.
It was the best. It was a really. It's an amazing company. Yeah. The people are great. The talent is unmatched.
And you must be proud of them. They posted $1 billion in revenue for the first time. And their stock went up 9%.
That's the thing. Their trajectory, they outperform every single quarter.
That's nice.
I mean, if you just look at their estimates and their growth is unmatched. It's they're a really great company.
But you worked in Austin. You didn't go down to Australia.
No. Because of my role, there was no need for me to go.
You're social. It could be anywhere.
Yeah. I did go to San Francisco a few times, but several people go to Australia. We had several Australians, of course, come in and work. So,
it's a great story.
It's a great company. Yeah. Of course, they definitely eat their own dog food. So, they work on the same products that they try to bring to market, and we had the most advanced versions of everything. Once a month had these things called these hacker challenges where you build your own product from their tools and then you incorporate it. And then if it works, you deploy it and people start using it in-house.
Nice.
And if it becomes successful enough, it'll roll out into a feature for everyone else.
That's cool.
And they did that all the time and it was so much fun.
They're agile. What a surprise.
Yeah.
So this was a big mistake. The scooter company Bird. Apparently, I didn't know this, there are Bird scooters piling up in city impound lots because they get abandoned and the city impounds them. And then people buy them, and it turns out with a $30 conversion kit from China, you just take the Bird board out and it depersonalizes it, turns it into a scooter, untethered from the Bird infrastructure. Cory Doctorow had the nerve to tell people that. And Bird sent us, and I'm quoting Corey here, a legal threat of such absurdity. We are publishing it in full along with a scorching response from the Electronic Frontier Foundation as a kind of celebration of truly world-class legal foolishness. They attempted to use 1201 of the Digital Millennium copyright. That section says you can't disseminate circumvention tools. But, of course, Corey didn't disseminate circumvention tools. He wrote a story about people doing that.
No, not even.
Not even.
They're not. They were just replacing the board. So
yes,
they
it's not circumventing.
Yeah.
You're taking the board out. You don't have to back, you know, you don't have to figure it out. You just take out the board. Oh, heaven forfend. So somebody at Bird's probably, yeah. Or Bird's law firm is probably going, oh, crap. Because
there's a Zip Recruiter.
Yes, there's a ZipRecruiter ad for that firm. As it turns out, Cory Doctorow is one of the chief campaigners against Section 1201. He's famous for it. And he isn't going to back down. He says, I've pledged myself to killing Section 1201 of the DMCA. He has a project called Apollo 1201, a mission to eradicate DRM in our lifetime. This is the guy you sent the 1201 cease and desist to. It's like pouring gasoline on the fire. Anyway, we're hoping we can get Corey with us down in South by. He's going to be at South by Southwest. Do you know Corey Wes? He is so much fun.
I have not met him.
One of the smartest. It's scary. He's one of the smartest guys I ever met. And so I'm like running to keep up with his intellect.
He ran for president, right?
No, that was Larry Lessig.
Oh, Larry Lessig. Yeah.
Another, you know, stalwart in the fight against DRM. Larry finally decided we're never going to get rid of copy protection. We're never going to get rid of, you know, crazy copyright and intellectual property protection until we get rid of this massive corporate money pouring into politics. So this is back in 2016. Larry Lessig, who's a professor of law at Harvard, he created Creative Commons, said, look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to run for president on one platform only to completely eliminate corporate donations, to complete campaign financing redesign so that you know, it's public financing. There's no corporate money in it at all. So when you elect me, on day one, I will do that. On day two, I'll resign. I'll have a really good vice president. He'll take over. Needless to say, Corey didn't even stand a chance, but it was, I thought, a brilliant plan. Brilliant plan. Here is the last story. We're going to let you all go home, but it's a beautiful story. Cremona, Italy. This is where the Stradivarius violin was created in the 1700s by Antonio Stradivari. These violins, which are in this museum, are dying. Not just Stradivarius's, but other classics by Amati and Guarneri del Gesù. They were, you know, age. We're going to lose them. So somebody had a brilliant idea. Let's digitize the sound. So the curator of Cremona's Museum of Violins, the Museo del Violino, has taken over the auditorium, is bringing in world-class musicians to play these violins. But they found out there's a little problem. Every time, there are cobblestone streets all around this museum. Every time a truck goes by, there's a rumble that gets picked up by the microphones. Fortunately, the mayor of Cremona is a trustee of the museum. He decreed silence in the city. They have roped off the entire area of the museum, and they've told everybody in Cremona, you need to be quiet during the recordings so that it'll take a long time. Four musicians playing two violins, a viola and a cello. They work through scales, arpeggios. They pluck the strings. They bow the strings. 32 ultra-sensitive microphones set up in the museum's auditorium will capture the sounds. When they'll have to play hundreds of thousands of individual notes and transitions for 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, for more than a month. But when it's done, these will all be digitized, and you will be able to buy Stradivarius samples that will capture the sound of these violins that are losing their, you know, tone with age, and they'll be preserved forever. Isn't that great? This is the auditorium.
Yeah. You can basically rebuild a whole song with the sounds that are being made.
You'll have every note, every tone, every transition. Starting in January 7th, police cordoned off the streets around the auditorium. The auditorium's ventilation and elevators were turned off. Every light bulb was unscrewed to eliminate the buzzing sound. I think it's fantastic.
Someday my son, who's three,
will be able to hear this.
We'll buy a Roland keyboard.
That's right.
And I'll just like, oh yeah, that's a Stradivarius voice there. It sounds pretty good.
Isn't that amazing?
He won't have any idea of what actually went into sampling that.
Isn't that a great story?
Well, that's amazing.
See, I told you we'd end it on a happy note. C sharp. That's a New York Times article, which is a great, really, they did a really nice job of this. It's a really fascinating article. Hey, I had so much fun. Thank you all for being here. Wesley Faulkner, he's developer relations guy at IBM. Anything you want to plug, Wesley? Anything you up to these days?
Well, if you're a developer and you're watching this show, get in touch with me. Send me a message on Twitter, and we'll connect. I am trying to figure out who would be good to add to my own work network in terms of we have speaking opportunities, we have like roundtables, we have different things where, as a company, we need experts to give their opinion on or possibly fly you to. And so I'm trying to increase my network of developers. So if you're a developer on machine learning, any type of R Python, scientific research, data mining, anything that's related to computers that you type on and make a program, send me a message on Twitter and let's connect.
You cannot steal Sebastian Peake. That's all I'm going to say. Sebastian, you're stuck at PC
Perspective. I work for IBM, not Intel.
Hey, Peake. There's a difference.
He's editor-in-chief at PCPer.com, and I am grateful to have him as our new host of This Week in Computer Hardware with Patrick Norton. Sebastian, it was great to have you. Anything you want to plug? I'm looking forward to reading that roundup of the new cards from NVIDIA. That should be very interesting.
Yeah. Well, just the website, PCPer.com, and there's a review. I already have a preliminary review of the RTX 2060, their new lower-cost card that still has ray tracing capabilities. I'll be adding to that. Like, my plans in the coming weeks are to add the DLSS story as that becomes available, to add more of, like, as the board partners like Asus and, you know, MSI EVGA release their versions and what they can do. Some of them are overclocked out of the box, that kind of stuff. So just check out the website, pcper.com. You can follow me on Twitter if you want to, at Sebastian Peake. But
how much would a 2060 set me back?
$349.
That's not too bad.
No, and it's really not the mid-range card people were expecting. They're like, oh, like 1080p gaming? Like, no, this actually is like 1440 gaming, or like ultra-wide 1080 gaming. So it's really kind of a step between the mid-range and the high-end, and 349 is pretty much exactly where it should be. They were very fair with pricing this time.
I just bought a video card for a server machine. I guess I don't really need anything fancy in a server machine, but it'd be nice if I could play, I don't know, Fortnite on it.
or if you know, the new version of Quake 2. Ooh. That someone came up with that
what?
Uses, like, it's entirely ray traced. Yeah, it's called Q2VKPT, and I could not type that straight. I had to go back and correct it later, but Quake 2 completely from the ground up, redone with ray tracing.
I loved Quake 2.
And Carmack did an amazing job back in the day with lighting effects with what he had, but now the hardware can do it, and it looks,
man.
The videos look amazing. I haven't installed it yet. It's all free. You can actually use the Quake 2 demo. It only needs some of the basic files, and then there's this whole new engine that's been created to run it, and this has been going on since like the mid to late 2000s, where they finally have like a full path-traced version that runs on like the new RTX cards.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. I'm thinking maybe I think I bought a 1060. I should send it back.
Yeah, the 2060 is literally double the performance of the 1060.
Holy cow.
So,
holy cow.
It's worth it. If you're still within that return window, get a 2060.
I might be. I got it at Newegg. That means I probably can send it. And I know what you were about to say, which is don't forget to tune in This Week in Computer Hardware.
That's right. How could I forget?
How could you
the
forget?
The show that covers, you know, me and Patrick just talking. I try to make sure we talk about projectors as often as we possibly can.
Why is that?
TVs. Just because we're both like projector nerds.
You're video guys.
I am. He is. I have the strange thing about my house, and my wife puts up with me for some reason, but we have an OLED. I had to have the B6 OLED back in like 2016.
Yeah, that's what I have. Yeah.
And then I also have this nice Epson UB5030 projector and a 100-inch screen.
Oh.
So it's like,
decisions,
but we can't have both. And then she was like, well, I mean, I had a projector on loan for a review, and I showed it to her, and she's like, oh, this is great. And she likes sports. She's actually a big football fan. Yeah. So I'm like, you can watch football on like the entire wall, and then I can have my OLED TV. So she was sold. So we actually have both. So the living room is like all screens.
Nice. We borrowed the Hisense dual laser 100-inch short throw projector for Thanksgiving, and I haven't given it back yet, but I have it at home. It is nice to have a screen that big to watch the we'll keep it through the Super Bowl for sure. It's really nice.
Ultra short throws and short throws are amazing, because like the ultra short throw I had for a little while, I set it on a table like a foot and a half away from the wall and had a 100-inch screen.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's not even that far. It's 8 inches away from the screen. We just love this thing. And the thing, Scott Wilkinson and Robert Herron came in and calibrated it. But when I turn it to vivid mode when I'm watching football, I want the green to look like it's fluorescent. It's better that way. I don't know why. I just like it that way. Well, it's great to have you, Sebastian. Welcome to the team.
Thank you.
And to my Millsplainer friend, where would we be?
I need to register Millsplainer.com or something like that.
We need you. We need you. We need somebody to tell us old farts what's going on with the kids today. Although, warning, fair warning, you're going to be replaced by a Gen Z-er in any day now. So
I already am constantly going, wait, what? I don't know what's going on. I'm so thankful I have younger siblings that I can sort of ping for advice.
Why are you putting on blindfold seat tie pots? Why is that?
Oh, God.
What is that all about?
Back in my day, we didn't do things like that.
Millsplainer.com. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody should go to chihuahua.coffee, which is the best name ever for a website.
Yeah, I can thank Renee Ritchie for that. As far as something to plug, check out somehowimanage.biz, or you can head to Jason Snell's, it's theincomparable.com, and look for Somehow I Manage. Oh, see, every time I keep forgetting that I needed to update some of these pages on my site, and then you lovely people bring them up, and then I'm like, wow, I need to do that.
A little bit of a problem. Not that I don't know anything about it. You like to launch shows.
Yes, indeed.
I know a little about that, but the latest is Somehow I Manage.
Somehowimanage.biz will take you right to that show.
Love it. Thank you, Micah. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Once again. And thanks to all of you for joining us. We do twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. You can stop by and in the studio. We had a nice studio audience today. Thank you guys for joining us. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. You can also watch our live stream, twit.tv/live. We stream video and audio of everything we do, so you can join us at any time. If you do that, though, join the kids who are watching in the back of the class. They're all hanging out on the chat room at irc.twit.tv. On-demand versions of everything we do also available on the website, twit.tv, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Just subscribe. That way you'll get every episode the minute it's done. Twit.tv. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit.
You can.
Bye.